Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 20th of the second month, 2026. It's a Friday and we are on cruise control. The number in studio is 083-288-401. Now, generally, today's supposed to be a happy day, but most people, they're just ngunya out there. I don't know. It's maybe the finances that are not financing. Is maybe also the people that got paid today are not the people that, you know. And I was thinking and I was wondering, Kucha, in life, how do we emotionally detach? Now, emotional detachment is not something that you would like, you know, to just have in the pocket. But I think in this modern day and era, I think we have to learn how to emotionally detach from situations, from people, from things, and which better way to do it, if not to go with the mastering of the technique. So, ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership. We are simply just allowing you to hear it.
There's a kind of strength that doesn't shout. It doesn't show up in loud arguments, emotional breakdowns, or constant explanations. It's quiet, steady, unshakable. And it comes from one thing, emotional detachment. But somewhere along the way, people began to misunderstand this word. They think detachment means apathy. They think it means being cold, unfeeling, disconnected. That's not true. Real detachment is not about becoming numb. It's about becoming free. Think of how often you lose yourself in emotions that don't serve you. You replay conversations in your head for hours, wondering what you should have said. You check your phone, waiting for a text that doesn't come. You let someone's tone, expression, or opinion decide your mood for the rest of the day. And you call that being emotional. When in truth, it's being imprisoned. The truth is, emotional overattachment is one of the biggest sources of human suffering. We get attached to people who don't value us. We get attached to outcomes we can't control. We get attached to versions of ourselves that no longer exist. And when those attachments crack, we mistake the pain for love when it's really resistance to letting go. Detachment doesn't mean you stop caring. It means you stop bleeding for things that don't care back. It means learning how to love without losing yourself. To give without expecting, to stay soft without being shattered. You see, emotional detachment is not a wall, it's a filter. It doesn't block out life. It lets through what's real and keeps out what's poison. It allows you to feel deeply and ease, but consciously. To be kind but not naive. To forgive but not forget your worth. Most people never learn this art. They swing between extremes. They either care too much or stop caring at all. They either drown in their emotions or bury them alive. And both are prisons. Think about the times you've been consumed by emotional chaos. A relationship falling apart. A friend's betrayal. A dream that didn't work out. Each time you tried to control what was slipping away. You tried to hold on tighter, thinking love, loyalty, or effort would fix it. But the harder you held, the more it hurt. That's the trap of attachment. It teaches you to fight reality instead of flowing with it. The art of emotional detachment is about finding balance between the heart and the mind. It's the ability to stand in the storm without being carried away by it, to feel pain yet remain peaceful, to be present yet not possessed. When you master detachment, life doesn't lose color. It gains clarity. You begin to see things as they are, not as your emotions want them to be. You stop chasing closure from others and start creating it within yourself. You stop forcing outcomes and start aligning with what's meant for you. You stop reacting and start responding. And this is where real power begins. Because detachment is not coldness, it's control. It's the inner calm that allows you to think clearly, love wisely, and act intentionally. It's what turns chaos into clarity, confusion into confidence, and heartbreak into growth. In this audiobook, you'll learn how to cultivate that balance, how to detach without disconnecting, how to feel deeply without drowning, and how to build an emotional foundation so strong that no rejection, failure, or loss can shake it. We'll explore the hidden cost of emotional reactivity and how to reclaim your peace. We'll uncover how your brain sabotages you and how to outsmart it. You'll learn practical tools like the stop method, reframing techniques, and emotional alchemy. And most importantly, you'll learn how to turn your emotions into your greatest strength instead of your biggest weakness. By the end of this journey, you'll no longer chase peace, you'll embody it. You'll no longer need to escape emotions, you'll understand them. You'll no longer fear detachment. You'll realize it's love in its purest form. Love without possession. Care without control. Presence without pressure. This is the art of emotional detachment without becoming cold. Let's begin. Chapter 1. The Hidden Cost of Reactivity. We all like to believe we're in control, that our choices are deliberate, that our emotions are rational. But most of the time, they aren't. We're reacting, not responding. Reactivity is the invisible thief of peace. It doesn't announce itself loudly. It slips in quietly, through moments that seem harmless. A single text left on scene. A colleague's tone. A friend's delayed reply. And suddenly, you're no longer in the present. You're in a storm of overthinking. You check your phone again. You replay the scene again. You build entire stories out of silence. And that's how reactivity works. It convinces you that every little thing must mean something about you. One small spark of emotion can burn through hours of calm. A misunderstanding turns into an argument. An opinion turns into an attack. A minor inconvenience becomes a full emotional spiral. And before you realize it, your day, your focus, and your energy are gone. Let's take a simple story. You're at work. You've put in effort, stayed late, handled the tough parts of the project. Then, in a meeting, your manager praises someone else, not you. You smile politely. But inside, something shifts. A tightness in your chest. A quiet voice whispering, "Do they even notice what I do?" By the time you're home, you're replaying it. You start scrolling, distracting, rationalizing, but deep down, you're hurt not because they didn't praise you, but because you tied your peace to their approval. That's emotional reactivity, your inner world being ruled by external validation. Now imagine a relationship. You text someone you care about, and hours go by with no response. Your brain begins its theater. They're ignoring me. Did I say something wrong? They've lost interest. In minutes, you've gone from calm to chaos. Not because of reality, but because of the story your emotions created. This is what emotional attachment without awareness looks like. It turns every silence into a wound, every delay into rejection. And the deeper the attachment, the stronger the reaction. Every time you react impulsively, you give away your power. You let someone else's words or behavior dictate your state of mind. And slowly, without realizing it, you become emotionally outsourced your peace depending on people who might not even care. We often think emotions are uncontrollable, but the truth is, reactivity is a habit. Each time you explode, argue, or withdraw in silence, your brain learns, this is how we respond to discomfort. Next time, it reacts even faster. Every reaction trains your brain to lose control faster next time. Over time, your nervous system starts living in survival mode. You walk into situations already tense. You read between lines that don't exist. You prepare for rejection that hasn't happened. You become addicted to emotional alertness, scanning for threats, even in safe places. And this is where peace dies, not in the big moments, but in the small, constant reactions that drain you drop by drop. There's a cost to this kind of living. You lose focus at work because your mind is busy defending your ego. You lose connection in relationships because you listen to argue, not to understand. You lose authenticity because you start performing to protect your feelings. Reactivity makes you fragile. Every opinion feels personal. Every disagreement feels dangerous. Every mistake feels like a collapse of identity. Because you're no longer living from truth, you're living from reaction. And here's the cruel irony. Reactive people think they're defending themselves, but they're really exposing their weakest point, their inability to stay centered. You can always recognize someone trapped in reactivity. Their peace depends on others. Their words carry tension. Their silence is loud with overthinking. They say things they don't mean and regret it hours later. They apologize for emotions they didn't understand, and slowly they lose trust in themselves because they can't predict their own reactions anymore. Self-respect erodes in moments like that. You begin to fear your own emotions because they keep hijacking your decisions. Maybe you've experienced this too. You told yourself you wouldn't argue, but you did. You promised yourself you'd stay calm, but you didn't. You said you'd walk away, but you couldn't. That helplessness isn't weakness, it's conditioning. Your brain learned to equate reaction with relief. But that relief is temporary, and the regret that follows lasts longer. Now imagine the opposite. You get criticized, but you pause. You breathe. You analyze the truth behind the words. You respond calmly. And you walk away with your dignity intact. That's what emotional detachment feels like. Not suppression sovereignty. Reactivity costs you time, energy, relationships, and self-trust. It keeps you emotionally broke, always spending your peace to buy back control. But once you see it clearly, you can begin to break the cycle. From this point forward, every emotional reaction you notice becomes an invitation to pause, to breathe, to choose differently. Because every reaction trains your brain. But so does every pause. And the more you pause, the more power you reclaim. The moment you stop reacting, you start mastering. You stop being controlled by emotion and start directing it. That's when emotional detachment begins to take root, not as coldness, but as clarity. And soon, you'll realize your calm isn't silence. It's self-respect. Every reaction trains your brain to lose control faster next time. But every moment of awareness trains it to find peace faster next time. Hont sont. Chapter 2. Why your brain sabotages you. You don't lose control because you're weak. You lose control because your brain was built for survival, not peace. And that ancient programming still runs your modern life. Every time you overthink, panic, or react without thinking, you're not broken. You're just following an old survival script. A script that was once useful, but now quietly destroys your emotional balance. Here's how it happens. When something threatens you, even emotionally, your brain's alarm system, the amygdala, takes over. It doesn't wait. It doesn't think. It reacts. In just 12 milliseconds, your amygdala fires a signal through your body. Your heartbeat quickens, your breathing shortens, your muscles tighten. Your body prepares for a fight that doesn't exist. And by the time your logical brain, the prefrontal cortex, wakes up, 500 milliseconds have already passed. The reaction is already happening. You said what you shouldn't have said. You slammed the door. You texted back out of anger. You defended yourself before even understanding the situation. The body reacted before the mind could respond. This is what psychologists call an amygdala hijack. It means your emotional brain temporarily takes your logic hostage, and in those few seconds, peace disappears. Now imagine this happening multiple times a day, each notification, each criticism, each moment of uncertainty. Your brain stays in low-level survival mode, always scanning for danger, even in normal situations. That's why emotional detachment feels so hard at first. You're not fighting people. You're fighting your own biology. Think about it. Why does a simple text message make your stomach twist? Why does silence feel threatening? Why does being misunderstood feel like an attack? Because your brain doesn't know the difference between rejection and danger. It's wired to keep you safe, not emotionally stable. This system was built for a world of predators and physical threats, but now the threats are invisible. An email from your boss, a partner's tone, a social media comment. Each of these triggers the same chemical storm as being chased by a wild animal. You scroll through the news or social media, and your amygdala lights up again every headline, every conflict, every argument. You're feeding your fear center without realizing it. The brain begins to normalize stress. You start mistaking anxiety for alertness, tension for motivation, and before long, your body forgets what calm even feels like. Here's the cruel truth. Your emotional reactions aren't personal, they're neurological. And until you understand that, you'll keep blaming yourself for being too sensitive, too emotional, or too reactive. But the brain isn't your enemy. It's just outdated. It needs retraining, not rejection. To detach emotionally, you must first create space between trigger and reaction. That's the gap where awareness lives. That's the place where your power begins. Every moment you pause, you interrupt the amygdala's instant takeover. You give the prefrontal cortex, your logical brain, time to step in, to assess, to breathe, to respond. And in that pause, you move from instinct to intelligence. Let's take a common scenario. Someone criticizes you. Your heart spikes, your jaw tightens, your mind races to defend. That's the amygdala firing. But if you breathe just once, you buy half a second of control. Half a second for your prefrontal cortex to say, wait, what's really happening here? That half second is the difference between peace and regret, between wisdom and reaction, between emotional detachment and emotional chaos. But here's where the brain sabotages you again. It loves patterns. Every time you react emotionally, your neurons connect faster. The brain rewards that pathway with dopamine. It tells you, good job, you survived. Even if all you did was argue, scroll, or overthink. So now emotional reactivity feels good because your brain has mistaken it for safety. That's why staying calm feels uncomfortable at first. Your brain doesn't interpret silence as peace, it interprets it as uncertainty. And uncertainty feels unsafe. To master emotional detachment, you must teach your brain that calm is not danger, it's safety. That not reacting doesn't mean losing, it means leading. Your goal is not to kill emotion, but to balance biology with awareness. To remind your mind, I'm not in danger, I'm just uncomfortable. Because the truth is, discomfort won't kill you. Overreaction will. The more you practice emotional awareness, the more your brain rewires itself. Neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to reshape itself, proves that calm can become your new default. It takes time, repetition, and conscious choice. At first, it feels mechanical, like forcing yourself to stay silent when you want to speak. Then it becomes natural, like choosing stillness because you value peace. And eventually it becomes automatic. Your body feels calm even when the world around you doesn't. That's when you realize emotional detachment is not suppression, it's mastery over the ancient instincts that once ruled you. So, next time you feel triggered, remember, you're not fighting the moment, you're rewiring your brain. Every pause is progress. Every deep breath is training. Every act of restraint is a message to your nervous system. We're safe now. Between the trigger and your reaction, there is a gap. In that gap lies your power. And in that power lies your peace. Chapter 3. The Four Levels of Emotional Mastery. Emotional mastery isn't a single breakthrough. It's a climb, a slow, conscious journey through layers of awareness. You don't wake up peaceful one morning. You build peace. One reaction at a time. There are four levels on this path. Four phases the mind moves through as it learns to respond instead of react. Each one reveals something about who you've been and who you're becoming. Let's begin with the first. Level 1, unconscious reactivity. This is where most people live without realizing it. Life feels like it's happening to you. You wake up already behind, already tense, already bracing for impact. Every message, tone, and gesture becomes personal. You don't choose emotions, they choose you. In this stage, you justify your reactions. You say things like, "That's just how I am," or "They made me angry." You don't see that you're giving away your power with every outburst. You believe peace depends on how others treat you, so you keep trying to control the outside world to fix your inside. This level is exhausting. It keeps you stuck in cycles of emotional debt, spending your energy where it never returns. The smallest trigger can ruin your whole day because your emotions are driving the car and you're just a passenger. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Level 2. Conscious reactivity. This is where awareness begins. You still react, but now you notice it. You catch yourself mid-argument and think, "Why am I doing this again?" You hear your tone shift. You feel your heartbeat rise, and a quiet voice inside whispers, "Stop." But you don't always stop. Because awareness doesn't erase habits, it just shines light on them. You start recognizing patterns. How you shut down when criticized. How you chase validation when ignored. How you replay pain to feel seen. This level can feel frustrating. Because now you know better, but you can't yet do better. It's like watching yourself drown while knowing how to swim. But don't mistake awareness for failure. It's the hardest and most important step. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Level 3, conscious response. This is where transformation begins. You still feel emotions deeply, but you pause before reacting. You take a breath. You analyze instead of assuming. You choose words carefully, not to suppress emotion, but to honor it without harming anyone. In this stage, you learn that calm is not weakness, it's precision. You start valuing peace over being right. You stop defending your ego and start protecting your energy. People may call you distant. They might say you've changed. But deep down, you know you're not colder, you're clearer. You no longer fight every battle. You let silence do the explaining. You let time do the teaching. You begin to realize that most things don't need your reaction. They need your absence. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Level 4. Emotional alchemy. This is the summit, the place where emotions no longer control you, they serve you. You don't suppress anger, you channel it into action. You don't avoid sadness, you use it to connect and grow. You don't fear fear, you use it to prepare and focus. You start transforming emotions into energy, anger into drive, pain into wisdom, loss into clarity. You no longer seek peace, you radiate it. Because peace isn't the absence of emotion, it's the mastery of it. At this level, you understand that emotions are messengers, not masters. They tell you where your attention is needed, not where your value lies. You meet them, thank them, and release them. You no longer drown in feelings, you surf them. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Reaching this level doesn't mean you never feel triggered again. It means you recover faster, you forgive quicker, you return to calm sooner. Because mastery isn't perfection, it's awareness repeated until it becomes instinct. Every level teaches you something sacred. From the chaos of reaction, you learn awareness. From the awareness of reaction, you learn control. From control, you learn understanding. And from understanding, you find freedom. Most people never reach level 4, not because they can't, but because they mistake emotions for identity. They think, "I am angry," instead of "I feel anger." They say, "I'm broken," instead of "I'm healing." They fuse who they are with what they feel. But you are not your emotions. You are the space in which they rise and fall. When you realize that, you stop drowning in waves because you finally remember. You are the ocean. Your goal is progress. not perfection. Each level is an upgrade. And every moment you choose awareness over reaction, you move one step closer to emotional freedom. Chapter 4. The Stop Method. There's a moment, a fraction of a second, between what happens to you and how you react. That moment decides everything. Your peace, your relationships, your power. Most people never notice it. They move straight from trigger to reaction, from emotion to explosion. They speak before they think, move before they breathe, decide before they understand. And then they spend hours, sometimes days, cleaning up what those few seconds destroyed. That's why emotional detachment begins with one practice, the power to pause. There's a simple method that turns that pause into mastery. It's called the STOP method. Four letters that can change how you respond to life. STOP. T. Take a breath. O. Observe. P. Proceed. Let's break it down. S. Stop. The very first step sounds simple, but it's everything. When emotion rises, stop moving. Stop typing that message. Stop speaking. Stop explaining yourself. Because the first action that follows emotion is usually the one you'll regret. The moment you stop, you create space, a sacred pause where control begins to return. That's your separation from the chaos. You're telling your brain, we're safe. We don't need to fight. Imagine you're in an argument. Your partner says something sharp, something unfair. Your mind immediately floods with comebacks, memories, proofs. You feel the urge to defend, to retaliate, to win.
Care that goes where you go. That's International Travel Insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
But instead, you stop. Even if it's just for 2 seconds, that pause is not weakness, it's power, because silence can disarm more conflict than shouting ever will. T, take a breath. Now that you've stopped, your body needs to catch up. Emotion begins in the body before it reaches the mind. So to calm the mind, you must first calm the body. Inhale for 4 seconds. Hold for 4. Exhale for 6. Repeat 3 times. Feel your heartbeat slowing down. Feel the heat in your chest fading. You're not escaping emotion, you're regulating it. Breathing tells your nervous system, there is no danger here. And when the body feels safe, the mind starts thinking clearly again. O, observe. Now that you've calmed your body, you can see the truth. Observe what's happening both outside and inside. Ask yourself, what's real here, and what's just my assumption? What am I feeling? Anger, hurt, fear, or disappointment? Is this moment truly threatening or just uncomfortable? Observation transforms emotion into data. It gives you perspective. You begin to notice how often your pain isn't about the present. It's about the past trying to protect you. Let's say a coworker criticizes your work. You feel defensive. But when you observe, you realize it's not about their words. It's about an old wound. Maybe from childhood, when being wrong meant being unloved. Observation brings compassion. You start responding to yourself with understanding instead of judgment. P. Proceed. Now comes the conscious choice. Proceed not with emotion, but with intention. Ask, what action serves me long term? Maybe that means speaking calmly. Maybe that means walking away. Maybe it means saying nothing at all. Detachment doesn't mean you stop engaging. It means you start engaging with clarity. You choose what deserves your energy and what deserves your silence. Let's test this in real life. Example 1. Argument. Your partner raises their voice. You want to raise yours back. You stop. You pause. You breathe. You observe that they're not attacking, they're overwhelmed. You proceed by softening your tone instead of matching theirs. And suddenly, the storm loses its power. Example 2. Workplace conflict. A colleague criticizes your idea in front of others. Your instinct is to defend. But you stop. You breathe. You observe that they might be projecting insecurity, not truth. You proceed by responding with calm logic, not emotion. And just like that, you stay respected, not reactive. Example 3. Stress or anxiety. You feel pressure, deadlines closing in, people demanding too much. You stop your rush. You take a slow breath. You observe your thoughts. I'm overwhelmed because I'm trying to do everything perfectly. You proceed by focusing on one thing at a time and peace returns. The stop method is simple, but it's not easy, because emotion demands speed and awareness demands slowness. To practice it is to rebel against your instincts. But the more you use it, the more natural it becomes. Your mind starts recognizing the early signs of reactivity, the tension, the racing pulse, the tightening chest, and it reminds you, pause. You start noticing that silence doesn't mean defeat, it means direction. Every pause builds emotional muscle. Every breath resets your nerve system. Every observation brings wisdom, and every calm response strengthens self-respect. Remember this truth. The power to pause is the power to choose, and the power to choose is the foundation of emotional freedom. Because you can't control the world, but you can always control your next moment. And that is where detachment truly begins. Chapter 5. Advanced Techniques. Emotional control isn't the end goal. It's just the doorway. Once you've learned how to pause, breathe, and respond, the real work begins optimization. Control keeps you from reacting, but optimization transforms the emotion itself. It's about taking what once broke you and turning it into strength. Let's explore the advanced tools that move you from survival to mastery. 1. Cognitive reframing, the power of perspective. Every emotion you feel is tied to a story. Something happens, and you give it meaning. That meaning becomes emotion. Change the story and you change how it feels. This is the art of reframing. When something goes wrong, instead of asking, "Why is this happening to me?" ask, "What is this teaching me?" That simple question shifts your brain from emotional suffering to emotional learning. Imagine you didn't get the job you wanted. You could say, "I failed." Or you could say, "This experience is preparing me for the role I'm meant for." Same event, different lens, different emotion. Your reality isn't shaped by what happens, it's shaped by how you interpret what happens. Try this simple exercise. Every time something negative occurs, write down 3 alternative explanations. If a friend stops talking to you, maybe they're overwhelmed, not indifferent. If you make a mistake, maybe it's feedback, not failure. If plans fall apart, maybe life's redirecting you towards something better. You can't control outcomes, but you can always control outlooks. And that's where freedom begins. 2. Emotional labeling. Name it to tame it. Most people don't feel emotions, they drown in them, because they never stop to name what they're feeling. Labeling an emotion moves it from chaos to clarity. The moment you say, "I feel angry," you shift activity from your amygdala to your prefrontal cortex, from raw reaction to rational awareness. There's science behind this. Studies show that simply labeling an emotion reduces its intensity. Next time you're overwhelmed, pause and identify, is this sadness or disappointment? Is it anger or frustration? Is it anxiety or anticipation? Precision brings power. When you name it, you separate you from it. You stop saying, "I am anxious," and start saying, "I feel anxiety." That small change creates emotional distance, and that distance is control. 3. Somatic regulation. Calming the body, calming the mind. You can't think clearly in a body that feels unsafe. That's why emotional mastery isn't just mental, it's physical. When emotions rise, your nervous system follows. Your heart races, your breath shortens, your muscles tense. Your brain mistakes emotional tension for danger. To regulate emotion, you must regulate physiology. Start with box breathing. Inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4. Exhale for 4. Hold for 4 again. Repeat 4 times. It's simple, but it sends a powerful message. We are safe now. You can also use progressive muscle relaxation. Tense each muscle group for 5 seconds, then release. Feel the tension leaving your body like a wave receding from the shore. Or try cold exposure. A cold shower, even for 60 seconds, resets your stress response and trains your body to stay calm under discomfort. When you teach your body to relax under pressure, your emotions begin to follow. 4. Timeline reframing, expanding perspective. In the heat of emotion, everything feels permanent. But emotion lies, it exaggerates the now and forgets the later. When something upsets you, ask, how will this feel in 1 hour? In 1 day? In 1 week? Time shrinks emotional intensity, and perspective dissolves panic. Think back to something that once broke you. The pain felt endless then, didn't it? And yet you survived. You healed. You grew. You barely think of it now. That's proof that what feels unbearable today might become invisible tomorrow. So, whenever emotion overwhelms you, zoom out. Expand the frame. See the bigger picture. Emotional detachment is often just emotional perspective. 5. Energy management, the foundation of stability. You can't master emotions if your body is running on empty. Fatigue, dehydration, poor sleep all mimic emotional instability. Sometimes you're not angry. You're just tired. You're not anxious, you're just over-caffeinated. You're not unmotivated, you're just undernourished. Your emotional state is biological, so take care of the machine that carries your mind. Drink water. Eat real food. Sleep 7 to 9 hours. Limit stimulants that amplify stress. Move your body daily not to look better, but to feel better. Energy is emotional currency. Spend it wisely. Because when your body feels stable, your mind feels safe. These techniques may sound simple, but their power is cumulative. They turn your mind into an ally instead of an adversary. Cognitive reframing teaches you that perspective is peace. Emotional labeling reminds you that awareness is control. Somatic regulation keeps your body in alignment with calm. Timeline reframing dissolves panic into patience, and energy management builds the foundation that keeps all of it stable. This is what emotional mastery looks like in motion, not suppression, but transformation. You stop fighting your emotions and start using them as tools for growth. Because the truth is, emotions aren't enemies to overcome. They're signals to understand. And when you learn to translate them, you stop being reactive and start becoming resilient. You can't think clearly in a body that feels unsafe. So make safety physical, mental, and emotional your first discipline. That's how detachment stops being theory and becomes identity. Chapter 6. Building the Baseline. You can't build emotional control in the middle of chaos. You build it in the quiet moments, in the routines, choices, and small disciplines that shape your nervous system every single day. Think of emotional mastery like a muscle. It doesn't grow during the argument, the rejection, or the stress. It grows during the recovery when you rest, reflect, and rebuild. Your reactions are only as stable as your foundation, and that foundation is built through daily habits that nourish your body, mind, and spirit, and you are to see. Let's begin where balance begins with sleep. Sleep the reset button for your emotions. You can't detach when you're exhausted, because sleep deprivation turns your amygdala, your emotional alarm system, hyperactive. It magnifies fear, amplifies stress, and shrinks your patience. 7 to 9 hours isn't luxury, it's maintenance. Sleep is where your brain rewires, repairs, and releases emotional residue. Without it, you're fighting life half-charged. Build a sleep routine that protects peace. Dim the lights an hour before bed. Put your phone away. The blue light tricks your brain into thinking it's daytime. Make your room cool, dark, and quiet. Don't scroll through chaos before entering rest, because the way you fall asleep decides the quality of your calm tomorrow. Nutrition fuel for emotional regulation. Your brain isn't powered by motivation, it's powered by chemistry. And that chemistry comes from what you eat. Each meal is an emotional decision disguised as a nutritional one. Too much sugar, too much caffeine, and your mood becomes a roller coaster, sharp highs followed by deep crashes. Protein balances neurotransmitters. Omega-3 fats stabilize mood. Hydration clears brain fog. Real food fuels real focus. You can't meditate your way out of a biological imbalance. Peace is physical before it becomes psychological. Eat like someone who values their clarity. Exercise movement as medicine. You don't need a gym membership to master emotion. You just need movement. Every step, every stretch, every deep breath signals your body, I'm safe, I'm strong, I can handle this. Cardio releases tension. Strength training builds resilience. Even a daily walk clears emotional
If you've static. Reached that stage in life Exercise where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah, yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, because you clearly haven't been polanified. Like, boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing?
Doesn't just change your body, it rewires your stress response. It lowers cortisol and raises serotonin, creating emotional balance that no quote or affirmation can replace. You can't stay calm in stillness if your body never moves. Cognitive flexibility, mental strength through openness. Emotional rigidity comes from mental narrowness. When you only see one perspective, every disagreement feels like an attack. Cognitive flexibility is the ability to hold multiple truths at once, to see that someone can love you and still hurt you, that a situation can be painful and still necessary, that you can be healing and still have bad days. Read books that challenge your beliefs. Listen to people you disagree with. Step outside your comfort zone. Growth begins at the edges of understanding. Because a flexible mind doesn't break when life bends it. Meaning the emotional compass. Detachment without purpose becomes emptiness. You need meaning, a sense of direction that anchors your emotions. Ask yourself, what am I really living for? What values guide my choices? What makes my struggle worth it? When life has meaning, small irritations lose power. You stop getting lost in petty arguments because you're too focused on what actually matters. Meaning turns emotional noise into emotional navigation. Environment, your silent influence. Your surroundings are shaping your emotional health constantly. The people you talk to, the music you listen to, the spaces you occupy. If you live in chaos, you'll think in chaos. If you surround yourself with growth, you'll expand. Audit your environment. Does it feed your peace or drain it? Are your relationships based on energy exchange or energy extraction? Sometimes detachment isn't spiritual, it's practical. You can't heal in an environment that keeps triggering your wounds. Choose calm surroundings like you'd choose clean air. They both decide how deeply you breathe. Strategic stress strengthening your emotional armor. Avoiding all discomfort makes you weaker. Controlled discomfort makes you stronger. That's what strategic stress is about, exposing yourself intentionally to small doses of challenge, so your nervous system learns resilience. Cold showers, difficult workouts, uncomfortable conversations, meditation when your mind resists it. Each small challenge tells your brain, I can handle this. And over time, the things that once broke you barely move you. The goal isn't to avoid stress, it's to outgrow it. Recovery, the art of returning to balance. You can't stay emotionally sharp if you never unplug. Schedule recovery like it's a ritual. Once a week, step away from noise, no screens, no notifications, no pressure. Go for a walk in nature. Sit in silence. Reflect. Let your nervous system reset. Recovery is where growth integrates. It's not laziness, it's leadership of your inner world. When you combine all these habits, sleep, nutrition, movement, flexibility, meaning, environment, stress, and recovery, you build what's called a baseline. It's your emotional home, your default state, the place you return to when life throws you off balance. Most people try to master emotions on unstable ground. They meditate once, read one book, or repeat affirmations while running on caffeine and 4 hours of sleep. That's not mastery, that's maintenance of chaos. True mastery begins with foundation, because strong emotions require strong foundations. Build your baseline like a fortress, brick by brick, habit by habit, day by day, so that when storms come, and they will, you don't crumble, you recalibrate. And that's when detachment becomes natural, not forced, not performed, but embodied. Strong emotions require strong foundations. Chapter 7. Your brain on mastery. You don't become emotionally strong by pretending to be calm. You become strong because your brain changes. Because every time you choose awareness over reaction, you're literally rewiring your mind. Emotional mastery isn't mystical, it's biological. Your peace has a physical address inside your brain. Let's look inside. Your emotions begin in the limbic system, the amygdala, hippocampus, and related structures that decide what feels safe or dangerous. When you're reactive, the amygdala runs the show. It screams, threat, attack, defend. It floods your body with adrenaline and cortisol. That's why you feel hot, shaky, or impulsive when angry. But there's another region, the prefrontal cortex, the seat of logic, planning, empathy, and control. It's slower, quieter, more deliberate. It doesn't shout, it thinks. It says, pause. Let's analyze. Let's respond, not react. When you start practicing awareness, breathing, reframing, you're strengthening that prefrontal cortex like a muscle. And the stronger it gets, the more it calms the amygdala before chaos begins. This is called neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to change its structure through repetition. Every calm response rewires the circuit. Every pause lays down a new neural pathway. You are literally training your brain to choose peace faster each time. Over weeks and months of consistent practice, the amygdala, your fear center, actually shrinks. And the prefrontal cortex, your center of control, thickens. MRI scans have shown this in monks, meditators, and emotionally aware individuals. Peace becomes less of a practice and more of a personality. That's what mastery looks like, not emotional numbness, but neurological evolution. Think about what happens when you first start exercising. At first, every movement feels awkward, your muscles shake, your breathing feels heavy, and progress is invisible. But over time, repetition makes strength natural. Your body adapts. The same happens with your emotional system. At first, it feels forced to stay calm. You'll forget to pause. You'll overreact again. You'll regret, reflect, and repeat. But every repetition counts. Every conscious response adds one more fiber of control to your mind. Every breath becomes a quiet revolution inside your neural map. In 8 to 12 weeks, your brain begins to change physically. Connections strengthen between your emotional and logical centers. The gap between trigger and response widens. You gain seconds, sometimes minutes, before the old patterns even rise. That's the gap where mastery lives. There's another layer, mirror neurons. These are the brain's empathy circuits. They reflect the emotions of people around you. That's why anxiety spreads in a room, why one angry person can change the entire mood. But it also works the other way. When you stay calm, others begin to mirror your calm. Your stability regulates their nervous system too. You become the emotional thermostat, not the thermometer. That's the beauty of mastery. You don't just heal yourself, you influence everyone around you, because presence is contagious. Your brain learns from patterns. So the more you surround yourself with peace, the more your neural wiring reflects it. This is why environment matters so much. Spend time with people who regulate, not react, who think deeply, not loudly. Your neurons will begin to copy their rhythm. You become what your nervous system repeatedly experiences. Now here's the truth no one tells you. Mastery doesn't make you emotionless. It makes you emotionally intelligent. You still feel everything, but nothing owns you. You can feel sadness without sinking, anger without attacking, fear without freezing. Your emotions become instruments, not interruptions. You play them. They no longer play you. And when your brain reaches this level of balance, detachment becomes effortless. Not because you avoid emotions, but because your nervous system knows how to flow through them. Your calm no longer feels like suppression. It feels like strength. That's when you notice something profound. Life doesn't get easier. You just stop being thrown by it. The chaos remains, but you've built an inner stillness that no storm can move. This is not fake peace, it's earned peace, a peace carved into your biology through patience, awareness, and repetition. So when people say you've changed, they're right. You have. Your brain has learned a new way of being. It doesn't crave chaos anymore. It craves clarity. And the more you practice, the more automatic it becomes. Because mastery isn't about forcing calm. It's about becoming calm. You're not pretending to be peaceful. You're becoming peace itself. You're not pretending to be detached. You're becoming free. You're not pretending to be strong. You're becoming who your nervous system was always meant to be, centered, clear, and conscious. You're not pretending to be calm. You're becoming calm. Chapter 8, Performing Under Pressure. It's easy to be calm when life is quiet, when no one is testing you, when the world is gentle and predictable. But that's not mastery, that's comfort. Real mastery begins when pressure rises, when you're under the spotlight, when the outcome matters. When emotions start to shake your composure and your mind wants to surrender to panic. Pressure reveals the truth about your training. It exposes how much control you've built or how much you've borrowed. In moments of stress, your brain will always fall to the level of your practice, not your potential, not your plans, your practice. That's why the emotionally detached, the truly grounded, perform best under pressure. Because they've learned that pressure isn't the enemy, it's the test. Most people see pressure as a threat, but the truth is, pressure is neutral. It's neither good nor bad, it's just energy. What makes it painful is the story you attach to it. The stakes are too high. What if I fail? What will they think of me? It's not the event that stresses you, it's your interpretation of it. Reframing pressure begins with a single mindset shift. The event is neutral. The story creates the stress. Two people can face the same situation. One crumbles, the other conquers. The difference isn't talent. It's meaning. To the untrained mind, pressure equals danger. To the trained mind, pressure equals opportunity. Because emotion is energy, and under pressure you get more of it. The goal is not to suppress it, but to channel it. Here's how. First, breathe before you believe. When adrenaline floods your body, it makes the problem feel bigger. Your breath is your anchor. Slow, deep inhales tell your brain, we're safe, we can think. And as your physiology steadies, your perspective widens. Second, focus on one action, not the outcome. When the pressure's on, your mind races toward what could go wrong. You start predicting failure before it even happens. But the key is simplicity. Focus on the next small step you can control. Whether it's speaking your line, writing the sentence, or taking the next shot, and bring your mind to what's now, not what's next. Because clarity lives in presence. Third label. What you feel. Is it fear? Or is it excitement disguised as fear? The body reacts the same way to both. Labeling reclaims the meaning. Say to yourself, I'm not nervous, I'm alert. I'm not afraid, I'm ready. That linguistic shift changes chemistry. You transform anxiety into activation. Think of athletes, performers, leaders. They all feel pressure, but they train their nervous system to see it as signal, not threat. Their calm under fire isn't luck, it's conditioning. They've learned the art of stress inoculation, deliberately putting themselves in controlled discomfort so that chaos feels familiar.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at Furmanbrock.com. We care.
Hours. Public speaking. Early mornings. Tight deadlines. Small discomforts that harden the mind for the big ones. Every time you face pressure on purpose, you teach your brain, this sensation isn't danger, it's data. And once the brain stops fearing stress, stress becomes fuel. Emotional detachment under pressure is not about feeling nothing. It's about feeling everything without being consumed. The detached mind knows, I can be scared and still act. I can be hurt and still think. I can be uncertain and still move. That's the paradox of mastery. Courage doesn't eliminate fear, it coexists with it. You don't wait to stop feeling nervous to act. You act while feeling nervous, calmly, intentionally, fully present. That's what separates amateurs from masters. Masters operate even when the emotion is loud. Because they've trained the gap between stimulus and response. They've built the muscle of pause so strong that even in chaos, they still choose awareness. To truly perform under pressure, you must adopt a process mindset. Focus on the method, not the result. The outcome is just noise, but the process is power. Ask yourself, what's the next right move? What's the one decision that aligns with my values? What would the calm version of me do right now? Detach from outcome, and excellence follows naturally. After each intense situation, practice after-action reflection. Not self-criticism, self-analysis. Ask, what went well? What can improve? What did I feel? How did I respond? This reflection builds self-trust, so the next time, your calm arrives quicker. Because emotional detachment isn't about staying untouched, it's about staying unbroken. It's about looking pressure in the eyes and saying, I'm not here to escape you, I'm here to grow through you. Pressure doesn't crush the calm ones. It refines them. It shows them who they've become. So the next time life turns up the heat, remember this truth. Pressure is not punishment, it's preparation. And when you learn to perform under it, you stop running from hard moments and start realizing they were never meant to break you. They were meant to build you. Pressure is a privilege. It means you're in a moment that matters. Chapter 9, Turning Pain into Power. Pain changes people. It either breaks them or builds them. But what decides the outcome isn't the pain itself. It's what you do with it. Every emotion carries energy, anger, fear, sadness, frustration. They're not problems to eliminate. They're forces waiting to be redirected. Emotional detachment doesn't mean ignoring these feelings. It means understanding their purpose and learning how to convert them into something useful. Because the truth is, the emotions you resist the most often contain the lessons you need the most. Let's start with anger. Anger is energy raw, hot, explosive. It tells you that something isn't right, that a boundary has been crossed, that your value has been disrespected, that your power has been ignored. Most people either suppress it, pretending they're fine while burning inside, or they unleash it, destroying what they were trying to protect. But there's a third way. Channel it. Anger, when directed, becomes assertiveness. It becomes clarity. It becomes movement. Every major act of change, personal or global, began with someone saying, "Enough." Use anger as a signal, not a weapon. Ask yourself, what value of mine was violated? What truth am I defending? Then express it with calm confidence, not chaos. The fire that once consumed you can become the flame that guides you. Next, fear. Fear is one of the most misunderstood emotions. It's not the enemy, it's the messenger. It says, pay attention. It says, this matters. It says, you're standing at the edge of growth. Fear means you care. You only fear losing what you value. Most people run from fear, but avoidance feeds anxiety. It tells the brain, this is danger. And every time you avoid, the fear grows stronger. Instead, approach it with curiosity. Ask, what is this fear protecting me from? Is it real or imagined? Then take one small action through it. Because courage is not the absence of fear, it's the decision to move anyway. Each time you do, your brain learns, I survived. I'm stronger than I thought. And the fear that once froze you becomes the focus that sharpens you. Now, sadness. Sadness isn't weakness. It's proof that you've loved deeply. It shows that something mattered to you, someone, something, some dream. Most people run from sadness because it feels heavy. But sadness isn't here to punish you, it's here to cleanse you. It softens the ego, opens compassion, and clears emotional clutter. When you stop resisting sadness, it starts revealing what truly matters. It teaches you empathy, humility, and patience. So instead of asking, when will this end? Ask, what is this showing me about what I value? Because sadness doesn't mean you've lost it, means you've cared. And care is not a weakness, it's humanity. Let it flow. Cry if you must. Release what you cannot hold. Because suppressed sadness becomes silent anger, but expressed sadness becomes quiet strength. Then there's frustration. Frustration is the emotional alarm that tells you something isn't working. It's not failure, it's feedback. It means your system, your process, or your pattern needs adjustment. Instead of exploding or quitting, observe it. Ask, what expectation did I have that reality isn't meeting? What small change could improve this? Frustration is the birthplace of innovation. Every invention, every improvement, every success started as someone being frustrated with how things were. Use it to refine, not to rage. Now you begin to see every emotion you feared was never the enemy. It was information. It was guidance. It was energy asking for direction. Anger becomes drive. Fear becomes focus. Sadness becomes depth. Frustration becomes design. When you start transmuting emotions instead of resisting them, you become emotionally alchemical, turning pain into power, reaction into response, and chaos into creation. Think of your emotions as fire. In the wrong hands, it burns. In the right hands, it builds. You can use that same flame to destroy or to forge. Emotional detachment is not putting out the fire. It's learning to control its direction. So, next time you feel something intense, don't rush to escape it. Sit with it. Listen to it. Translate it. Ask, what is this energy trying to tell me? And then use it. Because emotions are energy. You either waste it or weaponize it. You either drown in it or rise with it. The difference isn't what you feel. It's what you do with what you feel. Pain doesn't have to end you. It can reintroduce you to your power. And once you understand that truth, you stop fearing your emotions because you finally realize they were never here to control you. They were here to awaken you. Emotions are energy. You either waste it or weaponize it. Chapter 10, Emotional Intelligence in Relationships. Emotional mastery means little if it disappears the moment someone touches your heart, because love, friendship, and connection, they're where your growth is tested the most. It's easy to be detached in solitude. It's much harder to stay balanced in intimacy. Relationships don't break from lack of emotion. They break from lack of awareness. You can love someone deeply, but if you don't understand your own emotions and theirs, that love turns into confusion, conflict, and control. Emotional intelligence is the bridge between care and chaos. It allows you to connect without losing yourself. The first rule: not every emotion requires a reaction. When someone you love gets angry, anxious, or distant, your instinct may be to fix, to defend, or to take it personally. But detachment teaches you to pause, to see emotion as expression, not as attack. Sometimes the other person isn't fighting you. They're fighting their own pain through you. Their silence, their irritation, their withdrawal. It's often not rejection. It's reflection of their own inner storm. Your job isn't to absorb it. Your job is to understand it without losing your center. This is empathy, not enmeshment. Empathy without absorption means you can feel with someone without drowning in their emotion. You can hold space for their sadness without making it your responsibility to fix it. When they cry, you listen. When they vent, you don't compete. When they're quiet, you don't assume. You learn to see beyond words, to feel what they're feeling without turning it into a story about you. This kind of listening is rare. It's not waiting for your turn to speak. It's holding space with presence. Because sometimes, the most healing thing you can do is to understand, without interrupting. Emotional intelligence also means recognizing triggers in both people, yours and theirs. You begin to notice when conversations shift from logic to defense, when tone hardens, when old wounds start speaking through current words. Instead of matching their reaction, you slow yours. You take responsibility for your part, but not for their projection. You stay grounded in observation, not accusation. Because awareness breaks cycles that argument can't. In emotionally healthy relationships, you stop trying to win arguments and start trying to understand perspectives. You replace "you always" with "I feel." You replace blame with clarity. You replace defense with honesty. And slowly, communication transforms from conflict to connection. Detachment in relationships doesn't mean caring less. It means caring consciously. It means not allowing temporary emotions to destroy long-term love. But sometimes, detachment means walking away not out of anger, but out of self-respect. Emotional intelligence teaches you that love without boundaries becomes self-betrayal. You can forgive someone without re-entering their chaos. You can wish them peace while protecting your own. You can let go not because you stopped loving, but because you started understanding. Detachment doesn't kill connection. It preserves it because it filters out the noise of ego, expectation, and fear. The most mature relationships are built on calm. They're not built on constant passion or emotional highs. They're built on safety, knowing that both people can express, disagree, and still respect each other. Emotional intelligence turns relationships into sanctuaries, not battlefields. You no longer need to control how someone sees you. You focus instead on how you show up. With honesty, with kindness, with accountability, you learn to listen not to respond, but to understand. You learn to apologize not to end the tension, but to honor the truth. You learn to express love without demanding it in return. Because mature love doesn't say, I need you to make me happy. It says, I'm already whole and I choose to share that wholeness with you. Emotional detachment in relationships is not distance, it's depth. It allows two people to meet without merging, to love without losing identity, to connect without control. It's the kind of love that's calm instead of chaotic, steady instead of dramatic, free instead of fearful. When you reach that level of emotional awareness, you stop searching for someone to complete you. You look for someone who complements your peace. Because when two self-aware people meet, their connection doesn't drain energy, it multiplies it. True emotional maturity sounds like this. I love you, but I also love me. I'll be here for you, but I won't disappear for you. I understand your pain, but I won't make it mine. That's not coldness. That's clarity. That's the balance between heart and boundaries, the essence of emotional intelligence. The more emotionally intelligent you are, the less you argue and the more you connect. Because love doesn't need noise to prove itself. It needs presence to sustain itself. Chapter 11. Rewiring Your Self-Talk. The way you speak to yourself is the way you live with yourself. And most people live with a voice that doesn't sound like a friend, it sounds like a critic. You hear it when you make a mistake, when you fall short, when you compare yourself to others. That harsh, unforgiving voice inside, it's not truth. It's programming. You weren't born talking to yourself that way. You learned it. From parents who were critical. From teachers who shamed mistakes. From a culture that celebrates perfection and punishes humanity. And without realizing it, you internalize those voices. They became your inner dialogue, a constant background noise of self-judgment. But here's the truth. You can't master your emotions if your own mind is hostile territory. Emotional detachment begins inside with how you handle your thoughts when no one's watching. Because if you can't detach from your inner critic, you'll always seek validation from others to quiet it. You can't feel safe around people until you feel safe inside your own head. So let's begin the rewiring. Step 1. Awareness. You can't change what you don't notice. Start paying attention to the tone of your inner voice. Is it impatient? Sarcastic? Hopeless? Would you ever speak to someone you love that way? When you catch yourself thinking harshly, pause and label it. That's self-criticism. That's fear talking. That's an old belief replaying. Labeling separates you from the voice.
Good evening.
Evening well.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Mm.
But I'm not good because we have been trying to call your office all day that reporting the frequency, so that is not good.
Oh.
It has been now a week.
Okay. All right, I'll tell them now that Otapi is down.
Please, please.
I'll tell them.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
It reminds you that you are the listener, not the dialogue. Step 2. identify the script. We all have internal sentences that repeat in different forms. I'm not good enough. I always mess things up. No one cares about me. I'll never change. These thoughts aren't facts, they're emotional memories. Echoes of old pain disguised as truth. Write them down. Bring them into the light. Because once seen, they lose power. Step 3. Reframe the narrative. For every negative script, create a rational, compassionate counterstatement. I always mess things up becomes, I make mistakes like everyone else, and I'm learning from them. No one cares about me becomes, I might feel lonely, but that doesn't mean I'm unlovable. I'll never change becomes, I'm changing every time I try again. These are not affirmations, they're corrections. You're retraining your inner voice to speak in alignment with reality, not fear. Step 4. Practice compassionate dialogue. When something goes wrong, your instinct is to attack yourself before the world can. You say, I'm so stupid. I should have known better. But self-attack doesn't create growth. It creates paralysis. Imagine instead speaking to yourself like a mentor would. Use warmth without excuses. I made a mistake, but I'm still capable. I didn't handle that perfectly, but I can fix it. I'm struggling, but I'm learning. Compassion isn't weakness, it's accuracy, because clarity grows in kindness, not in cruelty. Step 5. Repetition and embodiment. Rewiring takes time. The brain learns through repetition, so feed it the voice you wish it had heard growing up. Every morning, start with one gentle sentence to yourself. Not forced positivity, grounded truth. Today I choose to treat myself like someone worth caring for. Every night end with reflection. What did I do well today? What did I handle better than before? This practice builds new neural pathways. You're literally teaching your brain to respond with grace instead of guilt. Step 6. Visualization. When you visualize, you rehearse emotional patterns before they happen. Picture your future self calm, confident, composed. Hear how that version of you speaks internally. They don't say, I can't handle this. They say, I've handled things before I can handle this too. Repeat that voice until it feels natural, because the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between imagination and repetition. It simply learns what you feed it. This is how identity shifts. You stop being the person who reacts emotionally to every criticism and start being the one who regulates, reflects, and responds. Your emotional tone becomes softer, your decisions clearer, your mind quieter. And you realize something profound. Detachment was never about leaving others behind. It was about leaving your old self behind, the one built on self-doubt and fear. Self-talk is not background noise. It's the soundtrack of your reality. If that soundtrack is filled with harshness, no amount of outer calm will feel peaceful. But when it's filled with self-respect, you stop chasing approval from others because your own approval finally feels enough. You are not what you feel. You are what you repeat. So repeat awareness. Repeat compassion. Repeat truth. Until that becomes your voice. Until that becomes your calm. You are not what you feel. You are what you repeat. Chapter 12. The spiritual side of emotional mastery. There comes a point in emotional growth when self-control is no longer enough. You've learned to pause, to breathe, to respond. But something inside still aches for peace that logic alone can't provide. That's when the journey becomes spiritual. Emotional mastery without inner depth can make you calm but not whole, because peace isn't just the absence of reaction, it's the presence of awareness. True detachment isn't disconnection, it's deep connection with something larger than your emotions, something that remains still, even as everything else moves. When you reach this level, You begin to see emotions not as enemies or even lessons, but as waves rising, falling, passing. And behind those waves, you start to sense the ocean, the silent observer that never moves. That observer is you, the awareness behind the thoughts, the calm behind the chaos, the presence that watches every emotion come and go without being swept away. This is not coldness, it's consciousness. The spiritual side of detachment begins when you stop confusing stillness with suppression. You no longer force yourself to feel nothing. You simply allow what's there fully without judgment, without resistance, without story. You begin to realize the more you fight emotion, the longer it stays. But the moment you accept it, it softens and dissolves. Acceptance is the ultimate act of control, because when you stop trying to control the feeling, you regain control of your awareness. Stillness doesn't mean nothing happens. It means everything happens, and you stay centered anyway, aye. It's sitting in silence while your thoughts try to pull you into drama and choosing to observe instead of obey. That moment when you realize you can watch emotion without becoming it is spiritual awakening in its purest form. Because you finally understand that peace was never something to create, it was something to uncover. Call it mindfulness. Call it surrender. Call it prayer. The name doesn't matter. What matters is the state of awareness, that deep, wordless recognition that you are not the emotion passing through you. You are the space it passes through. And in that recognition, you find freedom. Let's talk about control and surrender. They sound like opposites, but they're not. Control is what you practice when you don't yet trust. Surrender is what happens when you do. At the start of your journey, you use structure routines, breathing, boundaries to create safety. But eventually you realize that true safety doesn't come from controlling everything. It comes from trusting that you can handle whatever happens. That's surrender, not giving up, but letting go of resistance. You stop needing every emotion to make sense. You stop needing every person to understand you. You stop needing every plan to go perfectly, because the deeper part of you knows nothing is truly against you. Everything is teaching you. This awareness gives birth to compassion. You start seeing others differently, not as problems to fix, but as humans fighting invisible battles, just like you once did. You forgive not because they deserve it, but because you deserve freedom from carrying the weight. You stop trying to win arguments. You start trying to preserve peace. You stop seeking revenge. You start seeking understanding. And the more compassion you extend outward, the more peace grows inward. Forgiveness, empathy, understanding. They are not spiritual luxuries. They are emotional technologies. They free trapped energy. They unclog the emotional system. You begin to realize something profound. Emotional mastery and spiritual maturity are the same journey, spoken in different languages. Both lead you home back to the quiet center that watches it all unfold. In that center, you no longer crave constant positivity. You crave presence. You crave simplicity. You crave truth. You start finding beauty in ordinary moments, the sound of your breath, the warmth of sunlight, the calm after tears. Because in stillness, even pain becomes sacred. It's just life expressing itself in another form. You finally understand. Emotional detachment isn't about being above life. It's about being within it, fully awake. You can cry without collapsing. You can care without clinging. You can love without losing yourself. Because you've remembered who you are beneath it, all the awareness that feels everything, but is owned by nothing. And that awareness is peace. Emotional mastery is spiritual maturity, disguised as calm. Chapter 13. Living as the calm in the storm. Life doesn't wait for you to be ready. It doesn't pause when you're overwhelmed. It doesn't get easier when you've learned to stay calm. The storm keeps coming. But you change. You stop asking for the storm to end and start learning how to stand in it unmoved, unshaken, unbroken. That's what it means to live as the calm in the storm. Because calm isn't built in peace. It's built in chaos. It's not learned through meditation apps or quiet rooms. It's learned in traffic, in arguments, in disappointments, in loss. It's forged in the fire you once thought would destroy you. When life unravels, a job lost, a dream delayed, a relationship ending, the first instinct is to collapse, to overthink, to blame, to panic. But detachment teaches you something radical. You can be hurting and still peaceful. You can be grieving and still grounded. You can be uncertain and still faithful to your own calm. Because peace is not the absence of pain, it's the refusal to let pain own you. Think of the eye of a hurricane. Around it, winds roar, chaos spins, everything is in motion. But at the center, complete stillness. That's emotional mastery. Not escaping the storm, but becoming the center of it. You don't react to everything that moves around you. You observe it. You let things pass through your awareness without shaking your foundation. You begin to see life not as a series of emergencies, but as a series of experiences, each meant to strengthen your center. Crisis doesn't build character. It reveals it. How you handle breakdowns says more about your strength than how you handle success. When you're in the middle of chaos, your emotions will try to take the wheel. Fear will say, run. Anger will say, attack. Sadness will say, give up. But detachment says, breathe, watch, respond. You can't control the wind, but you can control your sails. And sometimes, that's enough. Let's talk about loss, because sooner or later, everyone meets it. A person, an opportunity, a version of yourself that once felt eternal. Loss isn't something to avoid. It's something to understand. It breaks open what you thought was permanent and teaches you impermanence is not cruelty, it's clarity. Everything changes. And the sooner you accept that, the freer you become. When something leaves your life, ask not why did this happen, but what is this making space for? Pain clears the room so peace can move in. You learn to hold things lightly. To love deeply but release gracefully, to give fully without needing to keep. That's the paradox of detachment. The less you cling, the more life flows through you. Living as the calm in the storm also means becoming a leader quietly. Not with authority, but with presence. When others panic, you breathe. When others argue, you listen. When others react, you observe. You don't need to speak loudly to be powerful. You only need to be steady when others shake. People trust the calm ones, because calm says, I'm not controlled by fear. And that's magnetic. The world doesn't need more noise. It needs examples of peace. And when you embody that peace, you teach without speaking. But this way of living doesn't mean you stop feeling. You'll still get angry, still cry, still doubt. The difference is those emotions no longer define you. They visit, but they don't stay. You've stopped renting space in your mind to temporary feelings. You don't need to chase every thought or respond to every trigger. You simply return again and again to your center, and that return becomes your rhythm. Eventually, calm becomes your default. Not because life stopped testing you, but because you stopped testing life. You trust that everything will unfold exactly as it should. You've lived enough storms to know even destruction has design. You stop begging for control and start embracing flow. You start seeing setbacks as setups, loss as redirection, conflict as clarity. Because once you stop fighting life, you start dancing with it. And when that shift happens, you move differently. You speak slower. Think deeper. Listen longer. You stop trying to prove yourself, you start being yourself. Unrushed, unbothered, unmoved by temporary chaos. You become the calm others seek when they lose theirs. You become the quiet voice in a loud world. You become the eye in every storm, not because you conquered life, but because you finally understood it. That's what living as the calm in the storm truly means, to walk through chaos without carrying it, to feel pain without becoming it, to meet life's changes not with fear, but with grace. When you reach that state, you realize the goal was never control, it was harmony. The world doesn't stop spinning. You just stop losing your balance. And when the next storm comes, you'll smile. Because you'll recognize it. You've been here before. You've learned how to breathe through the thunder. You've learned how to dance in the rain. You've learned how to be calm, not because life got softer, but because you did. You've become the peace you were always chasing. You've become the calm in the storm. Chapter 14, 30-Day Integration Plan. Understanding emotional detachment is one thing. Living it, that's the real art. Change doesn't happen from what you learn once. It happens from what you practice repeatedly. Mastery is built through consistency, tiny, deliberate actions that train your brain, calm your body, and anchor your peace. So, here's your 30-day blueprint, a journey to turn awareness into embodiment. Not rules. Not perfection. Just practice. Because calm isn't found overnight. It's built one mindful choice at a time. Week 1. Awareness. The stop method. This week is about slowing down the loop between trigger and reaction. Every time you feel tension, stop. When emotion rises, stop. Use the stop method. Stop. Take a breath. Observe. Proceed. At the end of each day, write down the moments when you reacted and how you could have responded instead. You're not judging yourself, you're training awareness. This is where emotional mastery begins, in noticing before reacting. By day 7, you'll start to sense the pause, that sacred second between feeling and action. That's your freedom expanding. Week 2. Reframing emotional labeling. This week, we focus on clarity, transforming chaos into understanding. Each time a strong emotion arises, pause and name it. I feel anxious. I feel angry. I feel hurt. Label it clearly, because what you can name, you can manage. Then reframe it. Ask, what else could this mean? What's this emotion trying to teach me? Practice writing 3 alternate interpretations for every negative situation that happens this week. By the end of week 2, you'll start realizing your power isn't in controlling feelings, it's in controlling the meaning you give them. Week 3. Controlled discomfort recovery. Now that you've stabilized awareness, it's time to strengthen resilience. Introduce 1 controlled challenge daily, something slightly uncomfortable but safe. Take a cold shower. Do a hard workout. Have that honest conversation you've been avoiding. Wake up 30 minutes earlier for stillness. The goal isn't pain, it's proof. You're showing your mind that discomfort isn't danger. Balance this with recovery, rituals, evening walks, quiet reflection, journaling, no screen time. Discomfort strengthens. Recovery integrates. By the end of this week, you'll feel it a quiet confidence. The storm comes, but it doesn't move you as much anymore. Week 4. Alignment emotional integration. This final week is about living your peace, not performing it. Every morning, write 1 sentence of alignment. What emotion do I choose to embody today? Maybe it's calm, maybe it's patience, maybe it's gratitude. Throughout the day, act in alignment with that choice. Not to suppress other emotions, but to lead them. End each night with reflection. What tested me today? How did I handle it? What did I learn about myself? If you fail some days, that's fine. Mastery isn't a straight line, it's a spiral. Every return to awareness deepens the lesson. By the end of 30 days, something subtle but powerful happens. You start responding slower, thinking clearer, breathing deeper, feeling lighter. You'll notice that your peace no longer depends on others. That silence no longer feels empty. That stillness no longer feels strange. You've built an emotional home within yourself, a calm that travels with you everywhere. Because emotional detachment isn't withdrawal. It's ownership. It's knowing that your emotions belong to you, not to your past, not to people, not to chaos. You've learned to feel without falling, to love without losing, to care without collapsing. You've learned to stay grounded when life trembles, to see storms as teachers, to walk through pain with dignity. And now you live what others only talk about, peace that doesn't depend on peace around you. When the world shakes, the calm person leads. You've become that person. Not cold but clear. Not detached but deeply aware. Not empty but free. Because the art of emotional detachment was never about becoming less human. It was about becoming fully alive without losing yourself in the noise. You don't need fewer emotions. You need more awareness. And now you have it. Closing CTA, the final reflection. If you've made it this far, you've done something most people never do. You've stopped running from your emotions and started understanding them. You've learned that control isn't suppression, it's awareness. That peace isn't a gift, it's a practice. And that emotional detachment isn't coldness, it's clarity. You've walked through your own storms. You've met your triggers. You've faced your fears. And in doing so, you've found something rare, the quiet strength of self-mastery. Remember this. The world will always try to pull you back into noise. But now you know where silence lives. It's in you. It always was. Keep practicing awareness. Keep protecting your peace. Keep choosing calm over chaos, truth over reaction, presence over performance. And when life gets heavy, return to yourself. Breathe. Pause. Remember who you are beneath it all. Not the storm, but the sky that holds it. Because no matter what happens around you, you have the power to remain still inside. That's the real art, the art of emotional detachment. If this audiobook brought you value,
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitution.
There's a quiet kind of strength that doesn't shout, doesn't argue, and doesn't need to prove itself. It's the power of a person who knows their limits. A person who's no longer available for chaos, guilt, or emotional manipulation. Most people spend their lives trying to be everything for everyone. They bend until they break, saying yes when their soul is screaming no. They mistake people-pleasing for kindness and exhaustion for love. But every time you say yes to what drains you, you say no to your peace. Every time you ignore your boundaries, you teach others that your energy is free to take. And when your peace becomes public property, burnout becomes your home. Boundaries aren't walls. They're doors with locks that only you can open. They don't make you cold. They make you clear. Maybe you've noticed it, the heaviness after a conversation that went too long. The resentment building after doing something you didn't want to do. The way your body tenses when someone crosses a line you didn't even realize existed. That's your soul saying, this isn't peace. We live in a world that rewards overextension. Be more available. Be more helpful. Be more understanding. until you're left with nothing for yourself. But let me tell you something. You cannot pour love from an empty cup. You cannot give peace while living in chaos. And you cannot truly connect if you've lost your connection to yourself. This audiobook is your permission to stop apologizing for protecting your energy, to stop feeling guilty for saying no, to stop confusing self-sacrifice with love. Throughout this journey, you'll learn how to recognize when someone is crossing your emotional boundaries, how to communicate your limits with calm confidence, and most importantly, how to rebuild the peace you've given away. Because emotional boundaries are not just about saying no. They're about saying yes to peace, to clarity, to a life that feels aligned. By the end of this audiobook, you'll know how to protect your emotions without feeling guilty, how to respond instead of react, and how to honor your peace like it's sacred because it is. Your energy is your responsibility, your peace is your power, and your boundaries are the map that protects both. This isn't about building walls, it's about building wisdom. It's about learning when to open your heart and when to protect it. It's about loving deeply, but never at the cost of yourself. So, if you've been feeling drained, misunderstood, or overwhelmed, stay with me. Because this isn't just another audiobook about self-help. It's a guide to emotional freedom. Subscribe to Prestige Audiobooks to listen to daily mindset and emotional mastery books like this one. And don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment about what resonated most with you. It helps more people find peace too. Let's begin. Chapter 1. You don't lose peace in one moment. You lose it in 100 small ones, a sigh you swallow, a truth you silence, a boundary you let someone cross because you didn't want to seem difficult. It starts small. You ignore the discomfort when someone speaks to you disrespectfully. You laugh off the joke that cuts too deep. You answer the message you didn't want to reply to and agree to favors you don't have energy for. Each time you tell yourself, it's not a big deal. But it is, because every tiny moment you betray your own limits teaches your mind that your peace is negotiable. Let me tell you about someone I once knew, a man named Amir. He was the kind of person everyone relied on. If a coworker needed extra help, Amir stayed late. If a friend needed to vent, he listened for hours. He never said no. Not because he wanted to help, but because he was afraid not to. One night, after another long day of fixing everyone else's problems, he sat in his car, hands gripping the steering wheel, and realized he didn't even remember the last time someone asked how he was doing. That's what reactivity looks like. You move so fast to manage other people's emotions that you forget you even have your own. Emotional reactivity doesn't always look like yelling or anger. Sometimes it looks like overgiving. Sometimes it looks like people-pleasing or staying silent just to keep the peace that isn't really peace. But here's the truth. When you let your emotions drive you, you lose the steering wheel of your life. A reactive mind doesn't respond, it relives. It replays old fears. It repeats old defenses. It turns every disagreement into survival, every criticism into an attack, every no into rejection. It's the boss who snaps at you in a meeting not because you made a mistake, but because his ego can't handle feeling small. It's the partner who withdraws emotionally not because they don't love you, but because being vulnerable feels unsafe. It's you scrolling through social media, feeling invisible because someone didn't reply, even though your worth was never supposed to be measured in notifications. Reactivity costs you more than you realize. It costs your time hours spent overthinking what someone meant. It costs your energy replaying conversations you can't change. It costs your peace turning moments of silence into storms of worry. And most painfully, it costs your self-respect. Because deep down, every time you react instead of respond, you feel it. That sting of regret. That moment when your higher self whispers, you knew better. We often think emotional mastery means not feeling, but it's the opposite. It means feeling deeply and still choosing wisely. Think of your mind as a room. When you react instantly, it's like leaving every door open during a storm. Anyone's mood can blow in and rearrange your peace. But when you have emotional boundaries, you close the doors calmly and decide who gets to enter. When you don't, you'll find yourself exhausted by people you don't even dislike simply because they drain you faster than you can recharge. A reactive person is like a mirror reflecting whatever emotion is thrown their way. A grounded person is like water still, clear, reflective, but never disturbed by noise. Every reaction trains your brain to lose control faster next time. Every pause trains your power to return stronger. Here's what reactivity does in relationships. It turns communication into competition. It makes every misunderstanding a battle for control. It replaces listening with defending. And in that war, no one wins. You might find yourself arguing to prove a point you don't even believe in anymore, or apologizing for things you didn't do just to end the discomfort. That's how reactivity erodes connection. Slowly, quietly, consistently. But here's the thing most people never realize. Reactivity is not your fault. It's your conditioning. You learn to react when you felt unsafe. You learn to please when love felt conditional. You learn to overthink because silence once meant danger. Your nervous system doesn't know the difference between a real threat and an emotional one. It just tries to protect you. But in protecting you, it sometimes traps you. Think about it. How many times have you sent a message you didn't mean just to fix the feeling of being ignored? How many times have you raised your voice, not because you were angry, but because you were hurt? We react when we feel powerless. But the more you react, the more power you give away. There's a kind of peace that comes when you no longer chase emotional clarity from other people because you've built it within yourself. Boundaries are built one pause at a time, and every pause is a declaration that your emotions belong to you, not to the moment that triggered them. When someone disrespects you, you don't need to react. You can notice it, to name it, and decide, is this worth my energy, or is it an invitation to rise above? That's emotional maturity, understanding that not everything requires your response, but everything reveals your state of awareness. The truth is, emotional reactivity doesn't destroy relationships. It destroys you first. It eats away at your confidence, your calm, your ability to think clearly. And it leaves behind confusion. Why do I feel so tired all the time? Why do I always end up in the same emotional patterns? Because your energy leaks through every unguarded reaction, and peace can't survive where every impulse is obeyed. But the good news is you can change it. You can learn to breathe between stimulus and response. You can retrain your nervous system to stay calm under pressure. You can protect your peace not by controlling others, but by mastering yourself. And that's exactly what we're about to do. Because this isn't about suppressing emotion, it's about owning it. Every reaction trains your brain to lose control faster next time. Every mindful pause rewires it back to power. So, take a breath. You're not falling apart, you're just learning to protect your peace. Chapter 2. Your brain is ancient. It was built for survival, not serenity. And while the world has changed, your biology hasn't caught up. You still carry inside you the same circuitry that once scanned jungles for predators. Only now those predators are unread messages, cold tones, and unfinished sentences. Your brain can't tell the difference. To it, a rejection text feels like a lion in tall grass. That's why you overthink. That's why you replay conversations, why your heart races when someone says, "We need to talk." Because your brain's first priority is not peace, it's protection, and protection often looks like sabotage. Let's make this simple. You have two main emotional engines running inside you, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. The amygdala is ancient your alarm system. It reacts in 12 milliseconds. The prefrontal cortex, the logical reasoning part, takes 500 milliseconds to catch up. That means your emotions feel real half a second before your logic even wakes up. Half a second. That's all it takes to send you down a spiral of assumptions, arguments, and anxiety. You think you're making choices, but most of your choices are your brain trying to keep you safe from things that don't actually exist anymore. It's not your fault. Your mind was wired for threat detection, not emotional regulation. That's why someone's silence feels dangerous, why criticism feels like an attack, why you can't rest when something feels off. Because your brain thinks every discomfort is danger. But the truth is, not every uncomfortable feeling is a warning. Sometimes it's an invitation to grow. The amygdala doesn't care about truth. It only cares about survival. If something reminds you of an old wound, it rings the alarm, even if the situation is completely different. That's why you might react to a partner's tone the same way you once reacted to a parent's anger. The same body, the same chemistry, the same fear, different time, different story. That's the hijack, the amygdala hijack. It's when your emotions overrule your logic, when your brain says defend before it ever says understand. You felt it, that rush of heat during an argument, that impulse to reply fast before thinking, that sudden racing heart when you see something online that triggers you. Your mind floods your body with adrenaline and cortisol stress hormones that sharpen attention but blur compassion. In that state, you don't think clearly, you just react. And afterward, you regret it. You ask yourself, why did I say that? Or why do I keep doing this? Because your logical brain wasn't driving your emotional brain was. You can't master your emotions until you understand this battle inside you. Your logic and your emotion aren't enemies. They just need to learn to take turns. The amygdala says, something's wrong. The prefrontal cortex says, let's check if that's true. That space between alarm and awareness is where peace begins. But the modern world doesn't make it easy. Social media, news, and constant notifications keep your amygdala on high alert 24/7. Every scroll tells your brain you're missing out. Every headline whispers danger. Every argument online trains your body to live in fight or flight mode. That's why even on your best days, you feel restless, distracted, overstimulated. Your mind has become addicted to emotional noise. And when your system is flooded with constant alerts, stillness feels strange. Peace feels suspicious. Calm feels like boredom because your nervous system forgot what safety feels like. But here's the secret. Peace isn't the absence of emotion. It's the mastery of attention. You can't stop emotions from rising, but you can stop them from ruling. Start noticing the moment before the spiral begins, that half second before the reply, that pause between the trigger and your reaction. That's where your power lives. Viktor Frankl once said, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. That's not philosophy, that's neuroscience. Every time you pause, you rewire your brain to trust calm over chaos. It takes practice. But the brain is plastic. It changes with repetition. Each time you resist reacting, you strengthen your prefrontal cortex. You shrink the amygdala's control. You teach your body that not every emotion is an emergency. Let's look at a few moments where this matters most. Someone criticizes you at work, your body tenses, your chest burns. The amygdala screams, defend yourself now. But if you breathe and wait, your prefrontal cortex steps in and whispers, maybe this is feedback, not rejection. Or you text someone and they don't reply. Your amygdala floods your system. Are they ignoring me? Did I do something wrong? But if you wait 5 minutes, logic reminds you, they're just busy. Or you see someone succeeding where you've failed. Jealousy spikes, that's the amygdala. Pause. Breathe. Logic returns. Their success doesn't subtract from mine. This is emotional fitness, not ignoring feelings, but training them. You don't fix emotional reactivity by suppressing it. You fix it by slowing it down. Because you are not your first thought. You are your second response. The more you build that gap, the calmer your world becomes. Imagine your mind as a river. The current will always move thoughts, emotions, memories. But you are not the water. You are the space that holds it. Every time you react less, your peace grows stronger roots. You start realizing you don't need to control people to protect your peace. You just need to control what gets your energy. That's what emotional mastery truly means. Not calm because life is easy, but calm because you refuse to drown in every wave. Remember, between the trigger and your reaction, there is a gap. In that gap lies your power, and in that power lies your peace. Chapter 3. There are levels to peace. It isn't something you find once and keep forever. It's something you climb toward. One layer of awareness at a time. Most people never make it past the first. They live on the edge of their nerves, reacting, regretting, repeating. But the ones who rise, the ones who master themselves, learn that peace isn't luck. It's a skill. And like every skill, it has levels. Level 1. Unconscious reactivity. This is where almost everyone starts. You don't even realize you're reacting, you just do. Someone says something rude, and your voice rises before your brain catches up. A friend disappoints you, and your chest burns with silent anger. Traffic, delays, rejection, deadlines, everything feels personal. You're not choosing emotions. Emotions are choosing you. You live like a puppet, pulled by the strings of every trigger. At this level, peace is impossible because awareness hasn't entered the room. You identify with your emotions instead of observing them. You say, "I am angry," instead of, "I feel anger." You think your emotions are facts instead of signals. And when you live that way, every disagreement feels like danger. Every discomfort feels like disaster. The person who cuts you off in traffic doesn't just interrupt your drive, they ruin your day. The text that doesn't come back in time isn't just a delay, it's rejection. You live in a loop of reaction, wondering why peace never stays. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Level 2. Conscious reactivity. At this level, something inside you starts to notice. You still react, but now you see it happening. You feel the heat rise, the tone sharpen, the muscles tense, and in that moment, you whisper to yourself, "I'm losing control." You know better, but you don't yet do better, and that's okay. Awareness always arrives before mastery. This is where guilt often creeps in. You regret how you spoke. You replay the scene in your head. You think, "Why can't I stop doing this?" But this guilt is not failure. It's feedback. It means your consciousness is waking up. At this level, the distance between emotion and action starts to stretch maybe just a second at first. But that second is everything. It's the beginning of choice. It's the moment your higher self says, "Wait." Ask yourself, "When was the last time I acted like this?" Level 3. Conscious response. This is the level where emotional maturity begins to take shape. You still feel deeply, but you no longer let feelings write your script. Something triggers you, and instead of reacting, you breathe. You take that sacred half second between stimulus and response. You watch the emotion like a wave and let it rise, crest, and fall. You begin to speak with intention instead of impulse. You no longer fight to be right. You aim to stay grounded. Your goal shifts from winning the moment to preserving the connection. You start to realize that you don't have to match other people's chaos. Their energy is theirs. Your peace is yours. When someone tries to provoke you, you understand that they're fighting their own battles, not you. You stop taking everything personally. You start protecting your calm like it's oxygen. And the beautiful thing? People begin to feel it. Your presence no longer adds to the fire, it cools the air. You become the person others trust to stay centered when things go wrong. This is where real respect is born from restraint, because when you master your reaction, you master the situation. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Level 4, emotional alchemy. This is the highest level where peace turns into power. You no longer just manage emotions, you transform them. Pain becomes perspective, fear becomes focus, anger becomes action, sadness becomes strength. You understand that emotions aren't enemies to silence, they're teachers to learn from. You don't resist them, you read them. When hurt arrives, you ask, what boundary needs attention? When anger arises, you ask, what value is being violated? When fear whispers, you ask, what future am I not trusting myself to face? You use emotion as fuel, not fire. You channel every feeling towards something useful, growth, wisdom, empathy. You don't suppress emotion anymore. You integrate it. You realize that true peace isn't sterile calm, it's powerful clarity. You can sit in the middle of chaos and still hear your own thoughts. That's emotional alchemy, turning reaction into reflection, pain into purpose, sensitivity into strength. Ask yourself, when was the last time I acted like this? Emotional mastery isn't about perfection, it's about progress. You will still stumble. You will still feel. You will still have moments where emotion overpowers logic. But now you'll see it happening, and that awareness changes everything. Every time you catch yourself before reacting, you're building new neural pathways, training your brain to choose peace over panic. You'll start noticing it in small ways first. You take longer to reply when upset. You walk away instead of arguing. You think before speaking. You choose silence instead of drama. Those moments are victories. They may not look like much, but they're how you rewire your emotional DNA. The more you practice awareness, the more space you create between who you were and who you're becoming. And that space, that gap between trigger and response, is where your transformation lives. Progress, not perfection. That's the only rule. You don't have to master your emotions overnight. You just have to master the next moment, and then the next, and the next after that. Each pause is proof you're evolving. Each mindful breath is a declaration that your peace matters. Because emotional mastery isn't about never feeling, it's about never being owned by what you feel. Your goal isn't to escape emotion, it's to elevate it. To let your feelings serve you, not steer you. To lead your mind instead of follow your moods. Your goal is progress, not perfection. Each level is an upgrade. Chapter 4, Muyin. There's a moment right before every mistake, a tiny gap between impulse and action. Most people never see it. They move too fast, talk too soon, and regret too late. But if you can learn to pause in that moment, you can change everything about the way you live. Love. And lead. That pause is power. And the simplest way to create it is the stop method. It sounds small, almost too simple to matter. But simple is what works. Because when emotions rise, you don't have time for philosophy. You need a clear tool that fits inside a single breath. So, let's break it down. S. Stop. Stop typing. Stop talking. Stop moving. Freeze the moment like a photograph, because right now your mind is trying to pull you into the storm. It's telling you, you have to say something, You have to fix this now. But you don't. Stopping interrupts the pattern. It cuts the fuel line between emotion and reaction. When you stop, you remind your brain that not every signal means danger. You remind yourself that silence doesn't equal weakness. You give space for clarity to breathe. Think of it like this. A car going downhill without brakes can only crash. But if you stop even for a second, you regain control of the steering. That's what you're doing when you stop. You're putting your hands back on the wheel. T, take a breath. In for four. Hold for four. Out for six. Repeat three times. This isn't just calm breathing. This is science. When you slow your breath, you send a signal to your nervous system. I'm safe. Your body begins to shift from fight or flight to rest and recover. Heart rate slows, muscles loosen, blood pressure drops, and most importantly, the logical part of your brain turns back on. Remember what we said earlier? The emotional brain reacts in 12 milliseconds. The logical brain takes 500. Breathing bridges that gap. It gives your mind the time it needs to catch up to reality. Try it the next time you feel cornered in a conversation. Before you defend, before you explain, before you lash out, just breathe. You'll feel the difference. That flood of heat will start to fade. Your words will sharpen. Your presence will return. Breathing isn't escape, it's preparation. Oh, observe. Now that you've stopped and grounded your body, you can actually see what's going on. Ask yourself, what's real right now? What's the story my mind is telling me? What am I assuming without proof? Because emotion is fast, but truth takes time. You might realize that you're not angry, you're hurt. You're not being attacked, you're feeling unseen. You're not upset at the person, you're reacting to the memory they triggered. Observation turns confusion into clarity. It turns reaction into reflection. Think of a heated work moment. A colleague takes credit for your idea. Your amygdala fires, defend yourself now. But when you pause and observe, you notice something else. This isn't about ego. It's about fairness. And fairness can be addressed calmly, not defensively. Or imagine a partner says something sharp. You feel your chest tighten, ready to fight back. But you pause, breathe, and observe. You see their tone, their exhaustion, their own emotional noise, and suddenly, instead of reacting, you respond with compassion. Observation creates empathy for yourself and others, because once you see clearly, the fight loses its fire. P. Proceed. Now and only now do you move forward. But this time you move with logic, not emotion. You ask yourself, what action serves my long-term peace, not my short-term impulse? Sometimes that means speaking up with calm strength. Sometimes it means walking away. Sometimes it means doing nothing at all. Proceed doesn't mean suppress, it means choose. Because maturity isn't silence, it's selective expression. You don't owe every emotion a reaction. You owe every situation a response aligned with your peace. Here's what that looks like in real life. Example 1. The argument. Your partner raises their voice. You feel your pulse spike, your hands tense. You want to match their energy, prove your point. But you remember, stop. You stop talking. You breathe slowly. You observe what's happening. I'm not angry. I'm scared of being misunderstood. Then you proceed differently. You say, I want to talk about this, but I need a calm tone to do it. That single pause saves hours of chaos. Example 2. The workplace trigger. Your manager sends a sharp email. It feels unfair. You start typing a long, defensive reply. Then you stop. You breathe. You observe maybe they're under pressure. Maybe this isn't personal. You proceed by replying with clarity. Not emotion, ah. You stay professional. You stay calm. And in that calm, your authority grows. Example 3. The stress moment. You're stuck in traffic, late for something important. Your mind starts racing. Why me? You feel anger boiling. You stop. You take three slow breaths. You observe you can't control the cars, but you can control your response. You proceed by turning on calming music, accepting the moment. Stress loses its power when peace becomes your habit. The stop method is not a trick, it's training. The more you practice it, the faster your brain rewires itself to stay calm under pressure. Over time, stopping becomes natural. Breathing becomes automatic. Observation becomes instinct, and proceeding with wisdom becomes your default. Every pause you take is a small act of revolution, because in a world addicted to speed, stillness is strength. You start realizing that peace isn't found after chaos, it's created during it. When others shout, you stay centered. When life throws storms, you become the eye of it. When things fall apart, you don't. Because you've trained yourself to respond with awareness instead of impulse. That's the difference between emotional weakness and emotional mastery, reaction versus response. The power to pause is the power to choose, and the power to choose is the foundation of peace. Chapter 5. Mastery begins when control turns into understanding. When you stop asking, how do I stop feeling this? And start asking, what is this feeling trying to teach me? Emotional mastery isn't about freezing emotions, it's about decoding them. Because the emotion itself isn't the enemy, the misunderstanding of it is. And now that you've learned to pause, you're ready for the advanced techniques, the deeper tools that turn raw emotion into refined awareness. These are the habits of people who stay calm when others collapse, who think clearly under pressure, and who walk through life with quiet power. 1. Cognitive reframing, the art of changing the lens. Your thoughts shape your feelings, not the events themselves, but your interpretation of them. Two people can experience the same moment one breaks down, the other breaks through. The difference isn't strength, it's perspective. Cognitive reframing is the skill of choosing a better meaning. When something negative happens, write down three alternate explanations. Example, you send a message and don't get a reply. Your brain screams, "They're ignoring me." Reframe it. "They're busy." They read it but haven't found the words yet. This moment is teaching me patience. Suddenly, the storm in your chest settles. Reframing doesn't mean lying to yourself, it means refusing to be a prisoner of one interpretation. Because your first thought is emotional, your second thought is powerful. Every time you reframe, you train your brain to search for peace instead of proof of pain. 2. Emotional labeling. Name it to tame it. Unlabeled emotion becomes chaos. Named emotion becomes clarity. When you feel overwhelmed, ask yourself, what exactly am I feeling? Most people use vague words, I'm mad, I'm stressed, I'm sad, but those words hide the truth. Are you angry or disappointed, stressed or afraid, sad or lonely? Each emotion carries a different message. You can't solve what you don't understand. Scientists call this emotional granularity. The more precisely you can identify an emotion, the faster it loses control over you. Labeling turns storms into sentences, and you can handle sentences. Try it right now. Think of something that's been bothering you. Instead of saying, "I'm upset," say, "I feel unappreciated because my effort wasn't acknowledged." Do you feel that? The air clears. The emotion softens. Because clarity is healing. 3. Somatic regulation. Calming the body. Calming the mind. Your emotions don't just live in your head, they live in your body. Every worry, every fear, every heartbreak leaves a physical footprint. That's why your stomach tightens during stress. Your chest aches during grief. Your shoulders harden under pressure. If you don't release it, your body becomes a container for tension. That's where somatic regulation comes in, methods that release emotion through the body, not against it. Here are a few powerful ones. Box. Breathing inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, hold for 4. It resets your nervous system like rebooting a computer. Progressive muscle relaxation, PMR. Tense and release each muscle group from toes to forehead. It reminds your body that it's safe to let go. Cold exposure. A 30-second cold shower or ice on the wrists resets stress hormones instantly. Movement walk, stretch, or exercise. Energy trapped in motion must be released through motion. Grounding touch. Press your feet into the floor. Feel your hands. Name 5 things you can see. Anchor yourself in the present. Somatic regulation reminds you that emotions are not endless. They're energetic. They move when you move. You don't think your way out of anxiety. You breathe, stretch, and release your way through it. 4. Timeline reframing. The wisdom of distance. When emotion hits, your brain zooms in. It makes the moment feel eternal, the pain feel permanent. That's when you need timeline reframing, the habit of asking, how will this feel in 1 hour? 1 day, 1 week, 1 year. Perspective dissolves panic. Think about it. A year ago, you were worried about something that doesn't even matter now. And a year from now, today's storm will be another lesson you survived. Timeline reframing helps you escape emotional tunnel vision. It shifts you from reaction to reflection. Because time always shrinks intensity. What feels unbearable now often becomes a quiet memory later. Ask yourself in your next emotional moment, will this matter when I'm living my dream? That question pulls you back to peace. 5. Energy management. Protect the system that feeds the soul. You can't manage emotions with a drained body. You can't think clearly in a mind that's undernourished. Emotional mastery starts with energetic stability. That means sleep at least 7 hours. Lack of rest increases emotional reactivity by up to 60%. Nutrition. Eat real food, not processed comfort. Your brain runs on what you feed it. Hydration, dehydration mimics anxiety. Keep water near you always. Caffeine boundaries. Too much coffee feels like panic disguised as productivity. Digital detox. Limit emotional overstimulation. Constant scrolling keeps your brain in alert mode. Your emotions aren't always psychological. Sometimes they're biological. Sometimes peace isn't found in meditation. It's found in magnesium and a full night's sleep. You can't build emotional stability on physical chaos. Your body is the instrument your emotions play through. Keep it tuned. Let's tie this together with a story. There was a woman named Layla. She worked hard, always multitasking, always available. When her phone rang, she answered. When someone needed help, she dropped everything. But slowly she started losing herself, snapping at small things, forgetting her joy, feeling exhausted all the time. She thought she had an emotional problem, but what she really had was an energy problem. Her mind was trying to process emotions her body no longer had strength to hold. So she changed her habits. She slept more, ate cleaner, started walking each morning, and practiced the stop method whenever stress rose. Within weeks, her peace returned, not because life got easier, but because she got stronger. Emotional control is not emotional denial. It's intelligent awareness. It's energy in alignment with wisdom. You can't think clearly in a body that feels unsafe, and you can't find peace while living in chaos. Emotional mastery isn't magic, it's maintenance. You nourish your body, reframe your mind, and your emotions follow. That's how calm becomes your default. Chapter 6. Peace doesn't begin in your thoughts, it begins in your routine. Every emotion you feel sits on top of a foundation. Your sleep, your diet, your focus, your environment, your sense of purpose. If the foundation is unstable, your peace will always be temporary. That's why emotional mastery isn't just about what happens in your head. It's about how you live when no one's watching. Because calm is not a mood. It's a baseline, and you build that baseline brick by brick, habit by habit. Let's start with the first pillar, the one that controls everything else. Sleep, the silent architect of emotion. You can't outthink exhaustion. A tired brain is a reactive brain. When you don't sleep enough, your amygdala, the emotional alarm center, becomes 60% more active. That means small stressors feel huge and minor problems feel like disasters. Sleep isn't just rest, it's emotional reset. It's when your brain files memories, balances hormones, and restores your ability to regulate feelings. 7 to 9 hours. Dark room, no screens, an hour before bed. Let your body enter the silence it's been begging for. Because when you wake rested, your peace begins before the day does. Nutrition. What you eat is what you feel. Your emotions are biochemical. Every mood has a physical ingredient list. Skip meals and your blood sugar crashes. Anxiety follows. Eat too much sugar, your serotonin spikes and then collapses. Neglect protein, your focus evaporates. It's not discipline, it's chemistry. Start with the basics. Protein in every meal. Omega-3 fats for brain stability. Low sugar to keep your emotions steady. Hydration always half your body weight in ounces. Peace isn't just a mindset, it's a metabolic state. If your body is starving, your brain will scream louder than your wisdom. Feed it what keeps it calm. Exercise. Move the emotion out. Emotion means energy in motion. So when you don't move, emotions stagnate. You can meditate for hours, but if your body hasn't released the tension, your mind will keep replaying it. Move daily. Not to look good, but to feel good. Cardio for circulation, strength training for resilience, skill movement yoga, dance, martial arts for mind-body harmony. Your nervous system doesn't trust a still body. Movement tells it, I'm safe, I'm strong, I can handle this. Sweat is therapy. Discipline is emotional digestion. Cognitive flexibility training, in. Your mind to stay open. Rigid thinking breeds emotional chaos. The more fixed your beliefs, the more threatened you feel when life doesn't agree with you. Cognitive flexibility means staying curious. It means you can hold two opposing truths without breaking. Try reading things that challenge your views. Listen to people you disagree with. Try a new route to work. Eat something you've never tasted. Small acts of flexibility build mental adaptability, and adaptability is peace. Because peace isn't the absence of change, it's the ability to move with it. Meaning, the compass of emotional stability. People who lack purpose overreact to everything, because when you don't know what truly matters, everything feels like it does. But when you have meaning, a goal, a vision, a reason, you gain emotional immunity. You stop chasing approval and start aligning actions with values. Ask yourself, what matters most to me? What do I want to contribute, not just consume? What am I willing to protect, even if it costs me comfort? Your purpose doesn't need to be grand. It just needs to be true. Something that gives structure to your days and direction to your decisions. When you know your why, you stop reacting to every what. Environment. The hidden influencer of emotion. You can't build calm in chaos. Your environment either regulates you or ruins you. Look around your space right now, the lighting, the noise, the people, the clutter. Everything around you is shaping how your nervous system feels. Create calm intentionally. Keep one corner of your home sacred. No screens, no noise. Light candles. Play soft music. Add nature plants, sunlight, fresh air. And just as important, protect your emotional environment. People matter more than decor. Surround yourself with growth-oriented souls. Distance yourself from drama, even if it comes with a familiar face. Because your peace is too expensive to rent out to chaos. Strategic stress building, emotional muscles. You can't stay peaceful by avoiding discomfort. You stay peaceful by training for it. That's where strategic stress comes in. Controlled challenges build emotional endurance. Cold showers, early mornings, public speaking, taking a difficult conversation head-on. These microdoses of discomfort train your brain to handle pressure without panic. Every hard thing you face willingly makes the next storm smaller, because your body learns the truth. I can survive discomfort. And once your nervous system believes that, you stop fearing life. Recovery. The lost art of renewal. You're not a machine. Even the strongest minds burn out when they forget to rest. Recovery is not laziness, it's leadership over your energy. Schedule it like work, a weekly digital detox, time in nature, quiet mornings with no agenda, moments where you do nothing, and let that be enough. Stillness is not the opposite of growth, it's part of it. The tree doesn't bear fruit all year. It rests in winter, strengthens its roots, and blooms again. You're no different. When you allow recovery, your emotions reset. Your creativity returns. Your peace deepens. Every strong emotion requires a stronger foundation. Without sleep, peace collapses. Without movement, energy stagnates. Without purpose, calm fades. Your habits are the armor around your emotional world. This isn't about being perfect every day. It's about building rituals that keep you aligned when life gets unpredictable. Because when the foundation is strong, storms don't shake you, they refine you. Emotional control is not built in crisis, it's built in the quiet moments. You choose discipline over distraction. Strong emotions require strong foundations. And those foundations sleep, nutrition, movement, meaning, recovery, are what allow you to stay peaceful when the world isn't. Chapter 7. You are not pretending to be calm, you are becoming calm. That difference matters, because calm isn't something you act out, it's something your brain builds. Every moment you choose awareness over impulse, you're literally rewiring the structure of your mind. You're sculpting new neural pathways, roads that lead not to chaos, but to clarity. This is not poetry, this is biology. Your brain is a living system of repetition. Whatever you practice, it perfects. If you practice anger, it becomes faster at rage. If you practice worry, it becomes efficient at anxiety. If you practice peace, it begins to crave calm. That's how neuroplasticity works. The brain reshapes itself based on what you repeat. Every reaction you resist becomes a new connection. Every pause strengthens the bridge between emotion and logic. Every moment of patience is not just discipline, it's rewiring. You can literally see it on brain scans. Studies show that with consistent mindfulness, the amygdala, your fear center, starts to shrink. At the same time, your prefrontal cortex, the part responsible for reasoning and awareness, grows thicker and more active. That means every time you breathe through anger or choose silence instead of chaos, you're remodeling your inner architecture, eh? You're not suppressing emotion. You're teaching your brain that calm is safe. There's a reason why new habits feel awkward. Your brain is running old software patterns written during years of reactivity, self-defense, and survival. But repetition is the language your neurons understand. 8 to 12 weeks, that's what it takes for your brain to start forming new emotional circuits. The first weeks are resistance. You'll feel unnatural. Even fake. You'll say, why am I trying so hard to stay calm? This isn't me. But that's the point. You're not repeating who you are. You're rehearsing who you're becoming. Calm at first feels strange because chaos used to be home. But keep going. With every mindful breath, you're building a new home for your thoughts. Your nervous system also learns from environment. Mirror neurons. The empathy circuits in your brain cause you to unconsciously mimic the energy of those around you. Spend time with anxious people, and your body learns to stay on alert. Spend time with grounded people, and your heartbeat starts sinking to stillness. That's why choosing your company isn't judgment, it's neuroscience. Your brain is contagious. Your calm can heal others, but their chaos can also consume you. Be deliberate about who gets access to your energy. You're not being distant, you're being disciplined. The more you practice emotional mastery, the more effortless it becomes. Eventually, peace stops being something you reach for. It becomes your default setting. You start noticing subtle changes. Conversations that once drained you no longer pull you under. Insults bounce off your calm instead of piercing it. Your thoughts quiet faster. Your body recovers from stress sooner. That's neuroplasticity in motion, proof that change is biological, not just behavioral. You are programming yourself to think clearly, to respond wisely, to stay steady in storms that used to break you. Let's look at it this way. In the beginning, emotional control feels like swimming upstream. Every reaction tries to drag you back. But one day you realize the current has changed direction. Your brain now wants calm. It craves balance. It finds reactivity uncomfortable. That's when you know you've crossed the threshold from acting peaceful to being peaceful. This transformation isn't just in the mind. It's in the body too. Calm breathing lowers cortisol. Gratitude releases dopamine and serotonin. Compassion activates the vagus nerve, which slows your heart rate and boosts your immunity. Peace is not passive. It's a full body upgrade. You're not just chilling. You're regulating every system that keeps you alive. The calm mind heals the chaotic body. But here's the beautiful paradox. The more you master yourself, the less you need control. You start trusting your emotions, even the hard ones, because you know they can't overthrow you anymore. Anger visits, but doesn't stay. Sadness comes, but doesn't define. Fear rises, but no longer rules. You learn to watch each emotion like a cloud drifting across your sky, temporary, changing, harmless, once you stop chasing it. That's what mastery looks like. Not the absence of storms, but the confidence that you'll stay standing when they pass. Remember, the brain doesn't care about your intentions. It only cares about your patterns. So train it. Feed it calm daily. Pause when you can. Breathe even when you don't need to. Journal. Reflect. Observe. Repeat. Because the moment you start feeding peace consistently, your mind begins to hunger for it naturally. This is why the strongest people seem so unbothered. It's not because life spares them. It's because their brains have learned that peace is home. You're not pretending to be calm. You're becoming calm. And the more you practice, the more permanent that transformation becomes. Chapter 8. Pressure reveals who you really are. Not the version you post online, not the one who plans everything ahead, but the one who shows up when things fall apart. Anyone can be calm when life is kind. True emotional mastery appears when everything goes wrong. That's when you meet the untrained part of your mind, the part that panics, overthinks, and wants to run. But pressure isn't the enemy, it's the mirror. It shows you where your inner strength still needs to grow. Think about the moments when you felt under pressure, a difficult conversation, a job interview, a relationship argument, a test, a crisis, a sudden decision. In those moments, your body tenses, your chest tightens, and your mind floods with what-ifs. The world feels louder. Your thoughts get sharper, but your wisdom disappears. You become reactive, chasing control, forgetting that peace itself is the greatest control of all. Here's the truth. Pressure doesn't create chaos, it exposes it. Whatever is unhealed inside you will rise to the surface under stress, and that's not punishment, it's practice. To perform under pressure, you must learn to reframe what pressure even means. Most people call it stress, but stress is neutral. It's not good or bad, it's fuel. The story you tell about it decides its impact. Say this to yourself. The event is neutral. My story creates the stress. When something challenges you, you can tell yourself, this is too much. Or you can say, this is training. Pressure isn't meant to crush you. It's meant to carve you. Diamonds form under pressure, so does emotional resilience. The reframe of pressure. The next time life pushes you into a corner, remind yourself this is not chaos, this is conditioning. You're not being broken, you're being sharpened. Pressure means you're in a moment that matters. It means life has trusted you with responsibility. It means you've outgrown your comfort zone. You'll notice something. When you change your story about stress, your body responds differently. Your heart rate steadies. Your breath deepens. Your focus clears. Because the mind leads, and the body follows. Pressure becomes performance when you stay present. Stress inoculation training. Calm like a muscle. You can't wait for peace to magically appear when things get hard. You must train for it. That's where stress inoculation comes in. The same way vaccines use small doses of a virus to build immunity, you can use small doses of discomfort to build mental resilience. Try this. Take cold showers. Do intense workouts. Speak in front of others even if your voice shakes. Wake up early when it's easier to sleep in. Start the hard conversation instead of avoiding it. Each act of controlled stress trains your nervous system to stay grounded under pressure. Your mind learns, I've been here before. I survived this. That confidence builds quietly until one day you find yourself calm in situations that used to terrify you. This is the paradox of mastery. The more discomfort you face voluntarily, the less chaos controls you involuntarily. Laser focus. One task. One breath. When under pressure, your greatest enemy is distraction. Your mind jumps ahead. What if I fail? What will they think? What if this doesn't work? But the present moment never fails you, only the projections do. The solution is laser focus. Train yourself to focus on one action, only the next right step. When you speak, speak. When you breathe, breathe. When you move, move. You can't perform under pressure while living in the future. Bring your attention back to now, because right now is where control lives. Pressure loses its edge when your awareness narrows. It's like the eye of a hurricane calm in the center, chaos swirling around, but the center never moves. Be that center. Emotional granularity under fire. When stress rises, people tend to blur their emotions. They just say, I'm overwhelmed, I'm scared, I can't do this. But those are surface labels. Dig deeper. Ask, what exactly am I feeling? Am I anxious because I care about the result? Am I angry because I feel unprepared? Am I afraid because I've tied my worth to this outcome? Labeling gives you power. Once you name the emotion, you tame it. The unknown only controls you when you refuse to define it. Say it out loud. Write it down. You'll feel the emotion lose intensity like a wave that's been seen, finally allowed to pass. Process over outcome. The key to calm performance is detachment from results. When you obsess over outcomes, you give power to things outside your control, other people's opinions, random events, luck, timing. But when you focus on process, you take that power back. Ask yourself, what's the next best step? What can I control right now? Do that nothing else. Because when you anchor your energy to action, not anxiety, you stop drowning in what-ifs. Process breeds progress. Outcome breeds overthinking. And every master you admire, athletes, artists, leaders, has learned to love the process more than the applause. That's how they stay grounded while everyone else chases validation. After action, reflection. Learning. Instead of regretting, pressure will make you stumble sometimes, You'll react when you should have paused. You'll rush when you should have breathed. That's okay. Mastery isn't flawlessness, it's reflection. After every stressful moment, instead of beating yourself up, ask, what did I learn about myself? What will I do differently next time? That's how you turn pressure into progress. Every failure becomes feedback. Every challenge becomes a classroom. You stop seeing life as a series of tests and start seeing it as a continuous training ground for peace. Here's the truth most people never learn. Calm is not the absence of stress. It's the presence of focus. When others crumble under pressure, you'll find yourself steady not because you're superhuman, but because you've rehearsed your peace. The storm still comes. But this time, you've built the shelter inside you. Pressure is a privilege. It means you're in a moment that matters. It means life believes in your capacity to handle more. So the next time you feel it closing in, don't wish it away. Lean in. Breathe deep. And whisper to yourself, this is where I rise. Chapter 9. Pain changes people. It can make you bitter or it can make you brilliant. It can harden your heart or sharpen your vision. It can bury you or build you. The difference lies in how you use it. Because pain, in its raw form, is energy. And energy doesn't disappear, it just changes shape. You can waste it through resentment or you can weaponize it into strength. Every emotion carries a message. Every wound holds a lesson. But when you don't listen, pain becomes poison. It sits inside you, heavy, silent, unprocessed, waiting for the next moment to spill over. We've all been there, betrayed by someone we trusted, ignored when we needed understanding, hurt by words we didn't deserve. We carry it all, the disappointments, the rejections, the broken expectations. But emotional mastery isn't about pretending you're fine. It's about turning that pain into purpose. It's about asking, what is this teaching me? Instead of why me? Because nothing matures the soul like suffering that's been understood. Let's go through the four core emotions that usually hurt the most and learn how to transform each into power. Anger. When boundaries are violated. Anger is not the enemy. It's the messenger. It shows up to say, something isn't fair, something crossed the line. But most people misuse it. They explode or suppress both ways, hurt the messenger, and ignore the message. The truth is, anger is a compass. It points directly to your boundaries, your values, and your standards. When you channel it right, anger becomes assertiveness. It helps you speak truth without cruelty, say no without guilt, and stand tall without shame. Anger is a raw energy of protection. Transform it, and it becomes leadership. Fear, when the future feels uncertain. Fear isn't weakness. It's preparation. It's your mind scanning for danger before it arrives. But the problem isn't fear itself, it's your relationship with it. Most people run from fear, but the wise learn to walk with it. When fear whispers, "What if I fail?" respond with, "Then I'll learn." When it says, "What if they leave?" say, "Then I'll rebuild." When it says, "What if I can't handle this?" say, "I already am." Fear is energy looking for direction. Point it toward preparation, not paralysis. Let it sharpen your focus, not shrink your courage. Courage isn't the absence of fear, it's the decision that something matters more. Sadness, when value is lost. Sadness means you cared. It means something mattered enough to miss. We often try to drown it with distraction, work, or noise, but sadness, when faced fully, becomes connection. When you allow yourself to grieve, you rediscover your humanity. You remember that the same heart capable of breaking is also capable of profound love. Sadness deepens you. It opens empathy. It teaches you to appreciate presence because you've known absence. Don't rush your sadness, sit with it, Let it pass through you, because what's left afterward is gentleness, wisdom, and strength you didn't have before. Frustration when systems fail. Frustration is intelligence knocking on the door. It's your mind saying, something can be improved. It doesn't mean quit, it means adjust. When you feel stuck, you're being invited to innovate. Every great idea was born from frustration from people who refuse to tolerate inefficiency, injustice, or mediocrity. Frustration can destroy patience, but it can also create progress. When channeled correctly, it turns into discipline, design, and discovery. That's the secret of innovators, reformers, and leaders. They learned to translate frustration into creation. Let's put it all together. Emotion, what it means. Transformation, anger. A boundary was crossed. Channel it into clarity and assertiveness. Fear, the future feels uncertain. Turn it into preparation and focus. Sadness, something of value was lost. Transform it into connection and compassion. Frustration, a system isn't working. Use it for improvement and design. Every emotion has two versions, the reactive version and the refined version. React, and you stay stuck. Reflect, and you evolve. You can't avoid emotional pain, but you can learn to redirect it. You can turn heartbreak into hunger, loss into leverage, doubt into drive. Think of the strongest people you know. They aren't strong because life was kind. They're strong because they stopped letting pain be wasted. They built strength from suffering, wisdom from wounds, and depth from disappointment. They stopped asking, why did this happen to me? And started asking, what is this preparing me for? That's how pain turns into power. There was a time in your life when something shattered you, but look closer, that same pain became the reason you grew. It made you compassionate, alert, disciplined, humble. It taught you what no comfort ever could. Pain is a teacher wrapped in disguise. It arrives without invitation, but leaves behind a version of you that didn't exist before. So, the next time life hits you hard, don't waste your energy fighting the feeling. Feel it. Learn from it. Then rise with it. Because the same fire that burns also forges. And you were never meant to be consumed by the flame. You were meant to be refined by it. Emotions are energy. You either waste it or weaponize it. And the choice, always, is yours. Chapter 10. Emotional mastery means very little if it disappears the moment another person enters the room. Because peace is easy when you're alone. It's relationships that test how deeply you've really grown. The truth is, relationships are the mirrors that show you everything you still need to heal. They reflect your patience, your fears, your triggers, your empathy, and your limits. And without emotional intelligence, even love becomes chaos. Most people communicate to be heard. Emotionally intelligent people communicate to understand. They listen not just to words, but to tone, timing, and silence. They don't just hear the story, they feel the emotion beneath it. Because the deeper truth in every conversation is emotional, not logical. People rarely argue about facts, they argue about feelings, about not being seen, not being valued, not being respected. When you learn to hear the emotion behind the words, you stop defending yourself and start connecting with others. Recognizing triggers. Yours and theirs. Every person you meet is carrying an invisible emotional history. They have triggers built from old wounds just like you. Maybe they grew up unheard, so criticism feels like rejection. Maybe they were abandoned, so silence feels like betrayal. Maybe they were shamed for mistakes, so feedback feels like humiliation. And sometimes, you'll trigger that pain without meaning to. Their reaction might seem out of proportion, but it's not about the moment, it's about the memory. The key is to see beyond the behavior. Instead of saying, they're overreacting, ask, what are they protecting? That small shift turns judgment into compassion, listening for emotion, not ego. Most people listen to reply. Emotionally intelligent people listen to reveal. When someone vents, they don't rush to fix it. They reflect, it sounds like you felt ignored, or that must have hurt. This doesn't mean you agree, it means you understand. Validation isn't surrender, it's acknowledgement. It tells the other person, your emotions make sense. And when people feel seen, they soften. Because emotional walls don't fall with logic, they fall with empathy. Empathy without absorption. Empathy is your greatest gift, but without boundaries, it becomes your greatest weakness. Feeling deeply doesn't mean you must carry everyone's pain. You can care without collapsing. You can understand without absorbing. Think of empathy like standing in the rain with an umbrella. You can be there, present, supporting, but you don't have to get drenched every time someone else cries. Protect your emotional energy by practicing compassionate detachment. I see your pain, but I don't have to drown in it to prove I care. Because if you burn out, you can't help anyone, not even yourself. The language of I feel. The most emotionally intelligent people replace blame with ownership. They use I feel instead of you always. Instead of saying, you never listen, they say, I feel unheard when I talk and the phone's in your hand. Instead of, you don't care about me, they say, I feel disconnected when we don't spend time together. The first statement attacks identity. The second reveals emotion. And that difference can save a relationship. Because when you lead with honesty instead of accusation, the other person doesn't have to defend, they can finally understand. Boundaries without guilt. Love without boundaries becomes resentment. Because if you're constantly sacrificing your peace to keep someone close, you're not in a relationship, you're in emotional debt. Boundaries don't push people away. They teach others how to love you correctly. It's not, I don't care about you. It's, I care about myself too. Setting limits isn't selfish, it's sustainable. You can't pour compassion from an empty cup. Say no when it costs your peace. Say yes when it aligns with your values. And remember, guilt is just the echo of your old conditioning. It fades as you grow. Emotional maturity creates trust. Trust doesn't mean you never argue. It means you argue safely. It means both people can express emotion without fearing punishment. When emotions rise, emotionally mature people regulate before they respond. They pause before the text. They breathe before the words. They separate the problem from the person. They understand that in the heat of emotion, kindness is the greatest intelligence. Maturity doesn't mean perfection, it means consistency in calm. From connection to depth. Relationships thrive not on constant agreement, but on shared awareness. It's okay to be different in beliefs, in habits, in pace as long as you meet each other in the middle. In respect. Emotional intelligence makes love deeper, not easier. Because instead of reacting to what you don't like, you grow together through it. When both people understand that emotion isn't the enemy, they start fighting the problem, not each other. That's when love transforms from comfort to growth, from attachment to alignment. To master emotions in relationships is to bring peace where conflict once lived. It's to understand that every argument is an invitation to understand the other and understand yourself. You'll start to see that real strength isn't in being right, it's in being aware. The more emotionally intelligent you become, the less you argue and the more you connect. Because peace doesn't come from winning. It comes from understanding. And understanding, that's what love really is. Chapter 11. The most powerful voice you will ever hear is the one inside your head. It's the voice that narrates your life, that tells you who you are, what you're capable of, and what you deserve. And most people never realize that voice was never truly theirs. It was built from fragments of what others said, echoes of old environments, the tone of a parent, the silence of a teacher, the criticism of a friend, the judgment of a world that never learned how to listen gently. But here's the truth. You were born with peace in your mind. The noise was taught to you, which means it can be untaught. The inner critic, the voice you didn't choose. Everyone has one, that relentless inner voice that whispers, "You're not good enough. You'll fail again. You should be further by now." It disguises itself as logic, but it's really fear wearing reason's mask. That voice doesn't predict the future, it repeats the past. It's just memory, replaying old protection scripts. The child who was once scolded for mistakes grew into an adult, terrified of imperfection. The teenager who felt unseen grew into an adult, chasing validation. Your self-talk didn't come from nowhere. It came from how you once had to survive. But survival mode isn't living, and what protected you then is now what's holding you back. Awareness. Catching the voice in action. You can't change what you don't notice. So start paying attention to how you talk to yourself, especially when you fail, struggle, or get rejected. Notice the tone. Is it cruel? Is it impatient? Is it hopeless? Write down what it says. You'll see patterns, themes of guilt, inadequacy, comparison, shame. Then ask yourself one question. Would I say this to a friend I love? If the answer is no, you've found the place where healing begins. Because your mind believes the voice it hears most often, make sure that voice sounds like love, not fear. Replacing the script, from critic to coach. Once you've caught the inner critic in action, you can begin to rewrite it. Every negative statement can be transformed into a neutral or empowering one. Instead of saying, "I always mess up," say, "I'm learning how to handle this better."
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political, or to...
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If you are just joining us, Walata.